Boom, ladies and gentlemen, Josh Barnett, youngest ever UFC heavyweight champion. Now retired? Sort of?
No,
semi?
Not no. retired. Just I'm free in the wind. I'm like a bald eagle. I'm just out there just riding on that freedom.
That's America.
Just I decided to leave the fold of the UFC and chase my own futures by my own hands.
Are you actively competing or going to be actively competing?
There'll be some grappling stuff this year, but I'm figuring by the start of next year I'll get back into the MMA circuits, mainly because it's just going to take some time to set up camps, managers, the structure of everything.
Right.
I have proper sparring partners and all that.
And in the meantime, we were talking about you're doing commentary for New Japan Pro Wrestling with Jim Ross, and you do it on Access TV, right?
That's right. Every Friday night at 8, you can see me sit down and run my mouth about wrestling.
Yeah.
But we just did the live show up at the Cow Palace in San Francisco, which they've been having sporadic wrestling events there, but it was a big draw in that building in like the 60s and 70s, I guess. So it's a bit of a historical
It feels aspect. Like wrestling, pro wrestling is making a renaissance. It's like making a return.
Yeah, I think that there's a certain audience of a certain age gap that our age group that has come into flourishing into the internet and other ways to which to go ahead and bring wrestling back up there and show that wrestling, whether it's the biggest company like the WWE, all the way to say, you know, number two would be New Japan. And then there's all these independent companies all over the place that some of them have quite a decent following as well.
You know, Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins?
Huge wrestling fan.
He owns, what is the company that he
owns?
The NWA,
the National Wrestling Alliance. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he owns.
It's hard. NWA is NWA, the rap group.
It's that too.
You mean, that's what I hear when I hear NWA.
I'm sure there's some attitude involved with
I'm sure
the
there's
wrestling
attitude.
NWA.
Yeah.
Can't speak about the rest of it, but NWA is a legendary sanctioning body. And so it wasn't any one particular company, but it was a sanctioning body that would then oversee certain titles. And so if you're going to be on this show at this time, you're going to defend the NWA championship, the NWA commission would get involved, and they had their specifications as to how the title matches would be run and whether or not you could lose by disqualification or not, or if you know you could go over the top rope would be a DQ and little stuff like that.
Who did Killer Kowalski wrestle for?
Killer Kowalski? I couldn't tell you.
Do you remember him?
I know the name, but I don't really... I mean,
dude, when
he
I
was
in
a famous,
high school,
famous trainer after the fact. As
oh,
well.
Was he?
Yeah.
When I was in high school,
probably
he
NWA
was the
guy.
It was an NWA.
NWA
it was. That's
NWA.
Right. Did we talk about that with Billy? I think we did.
Maybe.
He was like local cable when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. It was like Killer
the territory
Kowalski.
Days. Yeah.
He had like a claw. He would like grab his own wrist and grab your head or some
yeah, the
shit.
Iron claw, like
guy.
Fritz Von Erich. Killer
yeah,
Kowalski.
Look at his hand. He's got his hand up, the claw. It's like there's some nostalgia to it. That's one of the reasons why I feel like it's coming back. It's like people who liked it as a kid are now, as adults, going back to it as a nostalgia.
And with the internet, it's much easier to go out there and put product out, right?
Yeah.
So it makes it more easily disseminated to any audience who might want to see it, especially with like you know, shows that are abroad. Like there are some shows that will go on in Germany and Austria that will get streamed and people get a hold of them. They get to watch them. So it's not like the tape trading days of yesteryear.
Does Jim Ross hook you up with his barbecue sauce?
You know,
he's got some fucking killer barbecue
he's
sauce.
He's got this. He's got sauce. He's got rubs. He's got all kinds of a whole menagerie of all your meat fixins.
Is he a pit master? Is he one of those dudes? Does he do the whole thing with the wood and like have a
don't
real
know.
Smoker?
His hickory chips.
Yeah.
And then he's got his white oak on the side. And
oh,
then
one of them guys.
Maybe.
Maybe.
At least in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like two types of people that use like that barbecue. There's people like me that use pellet grills, which is like infallible. You know, I use one of those Traegers.
Sure.
It's easy. You pour the pellets in, it does all the work for you. But then there's those serious motherfuckers who chop wood and dry it out.
Yeah,
and,
they've got the Colemans, those old, or the ones that start with a W, the Weber grills, that there's just nothing to it other than.
Oh, those kettle grills?
Yeah
those are for amateurs, bro. The real serious dudes, they get those side smokers.
Oh, sure.
So you have like the main chamber, and then you got a little wood box on the side where the wood's heating up, and then the air goes through, and it smokes from this. That's those people that cook at like 225. They never let anything get hotter than that.
Dude, I throw stuff over gas flames. That's what I do.
You one of those guys?
I'm a Luddite. I have no business having any voice in the realm of barbecuing.
But it seems like something you'd be interested in.
Oh, I love it.
You're a man who's into all things manly.
This is true, and I like setting stuff on fire and then eating it. But
do you still drive a manual transmission all around Los Angeles?
I just drove one today, yeah.
Fuck yeah, like
and
a man!
I've been driving around. I just got it out of the shop a little while ago. I have a 75 Formula Firebird. But ooh, instead of doing the LS swap, which everybody does, and I understand why, it's got a 455 Pontiac in it that we bored. I had a bored 60 out. It's got forged pistons. I didn't go with forged rods. I didn't need it, I think, because – well, no, actually, I did put forged rods in it, forged pistons. But iron heads, dual quads.
What are you looking at?
You know, I don't know. The goal was to just make maybe 1 horsepower per cubic inch, but have well over 500 pound-feet of torque. That was the idea. Just and it's a automatic, unfortunately.
Ugh.
Yeah. Center Force gives me crap about that all the time.
Why don't you just get it swapped out?
Because I like just being able to drive it.
Cut that third hole, son. Cut that third hole in the floorboard.
Put the clutch pedal in there. I'm more than down. But you know, hell, it needs paint. It needs interior done. You know. So
that's the Burt Reynolds car, right? Is that the year?
No, that's a 77.
Okay, you're 75?
75. So
oh,
it's
that's
got big hood scoops.
Circular headlights?
Circular headlights, still kind of a square, rounded off square for the center.
Jamie will pull it up. We can pull up 75 Firebird.
And the Formula has the big ram air scoops on it.
Right. The two, right?
Yeah, the big snorkels that come over the top.
Those are dope. There it is. Ooh,
yeah, so that's a Trans Am.
Baby.
And mine's a Formula.
Ooh, look at that car.
I like that yellow one on the right or that gray one. Yeah, Formula.
Oh.
So I've been driving that around quite a bit, and Hotchkiss did all the suspension on it. Willwood did the brakes.
Ooh.
It stops in a heartbeat.
That's a nice
car. Magnaflow exhaust.
That's one of the few cars that I like from 75. Like, I feel like everything after 71 is real risky.
In a way, I mean, some of the styling lines of these mid-70s cars, I kind of like it in the obnoxiousness of it all.
Mm-hmm.
But, and you know, whatever you get with these as far as – like, so this car came with a 400, the one that I bought. And it was like 7.5-to-1 compression. So it was just a total dog. People are like, hey, do burnouts. I'm like, I wish. I wish.
Well, that was the year that – I mean the years where the gas crunch was on.
Mm-hmm.
And they started making these cars gas efficient.
Right. Well, or they attempted to in some way. Not to mention they would – they started trying to incorporate smog elements to try and reduce the amount of smog, these things. But they were just highly inefficient the way they were going about it. With the AIR stuff and different processes that were like things connected to the heads, and it was just bad news.
Yeah, it was a rough time for America.
Dun, 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 I know. Dun, dun, the rare times that is, right?
Yeah, one of the rare times. It was a rough time for cars, like from 71 to the 80s, all mm-hmm. through the 80s. We just made dog shit cars.
Made some real snoozers.
Yeah. Pontiac was one of the few that was putting together a decent looking car, the Firebirds. And the Trans Ams. And then, of course, Corvette. Corvette still had some good-looking cars in the 70s.
They did, and especially because they, even with the low-horsepower motors, they're still a light car. So you can still get up there and hustle.
Fiberglass.
Yeah. And then with even into like 77, 78, you had the 6.6-liter, the 400, or the 403, I guess, by that point, in the Pontiacs.
Right now, chicks are turning off their fucking radio in mass.
I don't know if any chicks wanted to tune in to listen to what I had to say anyway.
Come on, bro. You're Josh Barnett. Chicks want to hear what you have to say. They want to learn the ways of men.
The ways of men?
Yes, they want to learn. There's a lot of fake men surrounding them.
There
they
are
get
a
confusing
lot of fake
signals.
Men. You know, I have a theory that, so not that long ago, maybe just a handful of years ago, I finally got like a leather biker style jacket.
And like so, the Fonz?
Kind of, yeah. But, O-Ray. Every time, you know what? But every time I smack something electronic, it doesn't work better. So they're.
Yeah, he had a magic touch, bro.
Absolutely. The ladies loved him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keeps their dildos in shape. But he, all right, so I got this jacket, and I've always wanted one ever since I was a kid. And I went to this store in New York because there was no, there wasn't a location locally where I could just try the jackets on. And I didn't want to buy an expensive jacket and have to send it back, all this stuff. So I was in New York, went to the store, found the jacket that fit me, loved it, bought it, been wearing the ever-living crap out of it, taking it all kinds of places. It's been in nasty black metal mosh pits with it on. I've been all around the world with it. I've been in far eastern Russia. Yeah, a leather jacket is made to tell a story eventually at the end of its
right.
life. But people will go, oh, you know, do you ride a bike? I'm like, no. The reason why I have this jacket is because of Mad Max and the Road Warrior. Because when I saw that and as a kid, those jackets look badass. And, you know, here's the bronze, the MFP running around and their Falcons just tearing ass and blowing shit up wearing these jackets. I'm like, I want a jacket like that. But I started to notice that this jacket was everywhere. Everywhere. Everybody was making a version of this jacket somehow or some way. This biker style jacket. Guys are wearing it everywhere. Chicks are wearing it everywhere. Hmm. And then I'm like, oh, that's a weird fashion trend. I didn't really see that coming. And then as I started to think about it more and more and more, it seems like there is a attempt within society to try and present the image of toughness, right? So from haircuts to jackets to all these different kinds of things. Everyone's trying to appear to be tough and badass all the time without – but people aren't going out there and necessarily risking it like they used to. They're not in generally taking on these jobs that are dangerous or even just – you know, people want to have muscle cars, but they don't want to work on them. They don't want to – it's like by having the item, it somehow implies some sort of
– character.
Yeah, some sort of toughness, some sort of rugged – element to yourself, like, you know, I'm a badass.
Like you've gone through it.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, you no need that jacket. You're falling off your bike going 70 miles an hour and just rolling and dusting yourself off.
And you'll see all the like the 30-year-old Hollywood-y type dudes with the manicured beards and all that on their Harleys that have all been, you know, turned into choppers and like, okay. Mm. It's like a big show of toughness without – because people aren't going out there and living tough lives anymore.
Is it toughness or is it coolness? And are they the same
thing? I think it's a coolness related to the idea of being tough.
Right. An attempt at authenticity.
Correct. And, yeah. You know, to use a term, like masculinity, right? And even though a woman that's appearing to be tough, I mean, you would call it a masculine trait, even though that doesn't mean that they're being a man.
It's well, she's putting out a signal, right? A chick that wears like a leather jacket and rides a bike, she's putting out a signal like, you better be a bad motherfucker if you want this, bitch, or I'm into girls.
Maybe. It's one either, of those, one of the, those and, two things. The previous could still apply to the latter.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
but,
absolutely.
It's like... you know, I'm a bad motherfucker, all right, whatever vibe you're trying to put out there. And then you go and you're like, well, okay, what's bad motherfucker about you?
I don't take no shit.
Yeah, sure you do.
Hey, bro, I don't take any shit. When my agent calls me, I tell him to fuck off.
I walked in, I nailed that audition. I didn't even have any product in my hair.
I don't give a fuck. You don't know me, man. I'm different.
It's just a casual observation. It's totally anecdotal, but it just seems like people are attempting to try and – it's like things – I always tell people about looking at human history. I go, the issues that we deal with, the things that affect us are not new. Just in a lot of ways, they're just more magnified, especially with social media. Social media, I believe, like picks and preys on certain elements of our way of being, our process. And it heightens our responses to certain things, but it also heightens what we see from these responses.
Mm.
Because when somebody is, let's say, massively insecure. So social media can really play hell on that and make you feel more insecure, especially if you're putting – depending on where you're putting value on what you see or what is said about you or how you are necessarily – if you're comparing yourself to others. Also – when you respond to that in some way through your own social media, be it by trying to take more grandiose photos or I don't know, whatever sort of signaling of how to make up for that, it shines even that much more to everybody else.
Yeah.
So what you do gets seen as much as you see what everybody else does. And then you're given an option on how do you react to that. Well, if you're not – I mean, these are the sort of – you can go back into old books on philosophy and you know, old historical texts. Insecurity is not going anywhere. We're not any all that much more different from 1,000 years or 2,000 years or 3,000 years in the way we react and respond to things than we are now. It's just that all these things are amplified under the elements of technology that are around us and how they can affect us and how much easier it is for that for those things to get to us.
Yeah, radically amplified. I mean, I see people fighting with people on Instagram. You know, see people fighting with commenters.
Yes.
You know, someone posts something and then other people shit on them and then they take their posts and comment on that. And you got to go, this is like hours of your day, man. And people are just sniping at you for the clothes you're wearing or your fake lips or whatever it is.
Something, right? And you could say, well, you know, you've got the person who's got a who's turned their social media into a very self-absorbed sort of platform, right?
That's a lot.
That's a lot. And then even in amongst that, it's like, well, I mean, to a degree, if it's your social media and you are the prime element within it, of course it would be a bit self-absorbed, but I think there's more nuance to it than that. And it's not just to pick on, say, you know, the gals that are taking all the sexy selfies and all that kind of stuff. There's the dudes that do essentially the same equivalent, and it's all in a, you know, often it could be in a response to drive attention towards themselves. But why do you want that attention in the first place? And then, of course, that's something that you can't know until you know the person exactly.
Well, a lot of girls make a living off of it.
100%.
Yeah, there's right. A lot of girls that they do like sponsored tweets or sponsored Instagram posts.
And once they can
I don't
get
know how many dudes are making a living off of Instagram that way. For like that got famous. Like for girls, it's like girls with big asses. And there's one girl that I just started following. Mm-hmm. Her whole Instagram is her ass. I mean, that is it, man. I was thinking, it was a terrible thing to think, but I was thinking if a dog ever came over and bit her ass, she'd be out of work.
That's it.
It's fucked up.
She'd have an arcing spray of fucking gel shooting out of her ass. Like,
she should have Kevlar pants on everywhere she goes. That ass is
Lloyd's
valuable.
Of London, I have, what will you give me per cheek on insurance?
She has a tremendous ass. Don't get me wrong, but it's just weird when there's this like one
Here's
body part that essentially defines your identity. Like this is
it's
what
almost,
she does.
Which is weirder that
it's great this, ass though.
This person with this fantastic, monumental, epic level ass is out there taking photos of it and putting it out there for people to see, or that people not only continue to look at it, but more flock to this religious icon of an ass, apparently.
Yeah, well, it is.
It doesn't get old, apparently. It just never gets old.
No, not for dudes. I mean, for girls, is there like one body? I guess it's abs. Is it abs? Like, what is the one body part? Turn to Jamie. Jamie?
Yeah. Hey, tell us about what girls are into.
What
are
girls
But
for girls, it's a wallet. Look how fat his wallet is.
It definitely has an effect.
He's got a fat wallet.
But, it wouldn't be surprised that women, in terms of that kind of shallow aspect of social media in that way could make more impact out of it. Because even when you look at, say, all the men's magazines, all the women's magazines and all that kind of stuff, like women want to look at hot women.
Yeah.
Right. So women are even driven to look at hot women. We're, of course, obviously driven to look at hot women.
Well, women know about filters, too. They're like, oh, this bitch is using filters. Look at her. That is not what she looks like.
And then
God. She looks like a cartoon. Sure Look at her face. Look at her face.
And then they're trying to find out what filter that was.
Yeah. What filter was it? That's a beauty filter. What camera did she use? Yeah. If girls found out that there was like one camera that really did it, there would be – every girl would use that one phone that has that one camera.
Exactly.
Like if they nailed it – I guess they're all pretty good now. But if there was like one standout phone that took better selfies, like that would be the one that they used.
Oh, it would be a marketing avalanche towards that demographic for
sure. Because like your rear phone, like if you have a phone, the camera on the back is always more powerful than the selfie camera.
Yes, but it's a bigger lens. And
for chicks, that's fucking bullshit. Like they need a good
selfie one.
They
need it all reversed the other way. Yeah. You need like multiple lenses. You can choose which one you need.
They're like, I know what my friends look like. I see them. I want to see myself. Bang. selfie sticks. If there was dudes, only dudes on the planet, there'd be no selfie sticks. That shit would have never been invented.
You don't think so?
No. Hmm. If it was only men and we found a guy with a selfie stick, that would be the guy we fucked. Like, hold him down. Hold him like, down.
What
with
is
a selfie
this?
Stick.
Is this, did you get injured? Is this a walking stick? Is this a portable baton in case you get attacked?
Are you using that to take photos inside of a bear cave?
Yeah.
Because you're about to go in. You want to make sure you know where the grizzly is?
Are you, putting that thing around corners to see where that rabbit is so you can get it?
Is that what you're doing? Because if not, I got a problem with this.
Well, my arms are short.
Fucking dudes with selfie sticks. That is a dark thing. There's something about it, like holding it up. Hey.
Yeah. I'm in front of
why does it even bother me? It doesn't even make any sense. Like, why is it okay for me to take a selfie with a regular selfie lens, but it's a problem if a dude has a selfie stick?
I don't know. It just seems a bit obnoxious, perhaps.
Well,
it seems that way. I can't say that I have a reason why it makes sense. Maybe it's simply because we view it as something that or we see women do it more, and so we think that a man is somehow doing something.
Well, it's like,
womanly? I don't know.
If a man gets fillers in his face, you ever see like an older dude who gets fillers in his face? You're like, bro, you want to pull him aside. Come here.
I'm sure I have. Yeah.
You want to go? No, just don't. You're going to be wrinkled. This is just it. You're 65 years old. You got to let it go. Let it go.
It's letting go on its own anyways.
But some gals can kind of pull it off and you feel bad for them, but they still are kind of pretty. So you
I'm
let
a
it
little,
go.
You know, personally myself, I'm not really all that into especially manipulating the face like that. For anyone, I just think that it's one, the potential for it to go really badly.
Real bad.
Is there. And two, I think that people, you don't have to look perfect to be a beautiful person.
Yeah. Yeah, your personality is at least as important as the way you look. And if your personality is such that you need to shoot plastic into your face in order to feel good about yourself, you know, I've got to go, ooh, like what's happening there below the surface?
It could be a indicator of something more serious that no matter how much filler, how nice it could look, maybe there's still going to be an issue per se.
It's also one of those things, just like anorexia or bodybuilders that can never get big enough, where they have body dysmorphia. People don't know what they really look like. Do you know about the Fibonacci sequence?
The numbers, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the golden ratio. It actually applies to facial features. See if you can find something on that.
Now, there was a BBC documentary on that, right? And at the time, I thought there was something about symmetry. And Elizabeth Hurley, when they made that thing, was considered like one of the most beautiful women in the world by the mathematics of it all.
She's still one of the most beautiful
women. I don't
doubt
it. Yeah.
That chick's like 88 years old. She's still hot as fuck. She's rocking it. But something about the way your face is shaped. You're like a good example is my friend Ari Shaffir. Ari has a thin face and a long nose, and it all works together. Like if he had my nose on his face, it would be like, hey, the fuck's wrong with your face? But the ratios of the width of his face and the length of his nose and the size of his eyes, all that stuff somehow or another syncs up.
So you're saying it's not the any one thing, it's the sum of your parts.
Yes. It's all those things go together. And if one of them is off, like say if you're – here it is, golden ratio in the face. So if you are a black woman and you have white lips – like a white woman's lips. People are like, what the fuck is going on with
her
lips?
How does she even whistle?
Right. She's got a large nose or a wide nose and, you know.
That's why I grow this facial hair and hide my skinny little
– skinny lips.
Fucking pointless lips.
You got Viking lips, bro.
I have been told, though, I've had some girls go, man, you're actually a way better kisser than I expected. Because you have almost, it seems like you have no lips. I'm like,
do you know that's
good,
exactly
bad?
What someone told Kylie Jenner, and that's why she got facial stuff
what, really?
Shot in her. Yeah, I was reading that today. This is what kind of a loser I am. 50-year-old man with children. I fucking pay taxes. I got a lot of shit to do. Meanwhile, I'm reading some article about why Kylie Jenner decided to take all the filler out of her face. It was a fucking article on my Google feed. And I was like, what is this?
Well, it's they know what you're into.
I guess they do. I don't know how
they've got you pegged.
These sons of bitches. How do they know?
They know the inner workings of Joe Rogan.
Well, filler is a fairly recent thing in human history. I mean,
I'm
how long has
that
been around?
I'm not all that familiar
for?
With it. I mean, I don't proclaim to be.
I don't
much
even
of a...
know what's in it. What is filler? Let's let's facial filler. Google that. What's in facial filler?
Sand, JB Weld, Bondo,
Gorilla Cum.
Yeah, probably depending on what how high a grade it is, or and there's the freshness levels of the Gorilla Cum.
What does it feel like if they touch your face, and you got some shit in it, it makes your cheeks pop. Some girls look like they got rocked, like their cheeks look. Injectable fillers for the face. Oh Jesus.
Hyaluronic acid. Now, see, collagen and hyaluronic acid are both going to get absorbed into your system eventually.
Yeah, I think that's the good part about it is that it's temporary. And then if you just let your body, raising scar depressions, enhancing lips, and replacing soft tissue volume loss through facial injections.
Enhancing lips, huh?
Get it done. But that's why it looks weird with girls when they have big fake lips, because of the golden ratio. Your face doesn't – it just doesn't work. Like, go back to that article on the golden ratio of the face, please, and you'll see, like, they have a – there's a whole mathematical sort of algorithm that they can use to explain what is and is not normal in the shape of your face. Like, look at what the fuck's her name? Angelina Jolie. Do you remember that song? There was a fucking song that someone – there was a song, god damn it, this is like 2002, the song was Angelina Jolie Got Some Big Ass Titties. That was the name of the song.
Was that top 40
amongst me and my stupid fucking friends? It was a funny song, like the dude who sang it.
Is that funny sober as well, or is it only...
That's a good question, and you'd have to ask somebody else. Those are the years from the from 2000 when I was doing Fear Factor. Is that it?
Stating the obvious, is that the name of this song?
Yes, it's got some big ass titties. It's just so stupid. From 2002 to somewhere around 2007, I think I was high every day.
It's all a blur. It's just like driving through a coastal fog.
What I was so bored when I was doing Fear Factor. The only way I enjoyed it, I was getting high as fuck.
You weren't enjoying all eating pig anuses and people screaming about having a centipede on their head.
And after a while, it got bored.
You get desensitized to it.
It just didn't.
Like, I just can't
anything.
Watch general porn anymore. Right? It's like, if there's not a robot in there, you know, having sex with a tiger while a midget films it.
Clearly that stuff does happen, right? Like, there's a reason why people like gag porn.
Was it Rule 34? If there's not a porn of it, that if you can think of it, there's a porn out there, and 35 is if it doesn't exist, it shall be made?
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's a 4chan thing. Not that I'm on 4chan all the time, but.
Oh, someone's got an alt account. There's something about, like, people getting desensitized. That's fucking absolutely real. And that's one of the reasons why, like, in times of war, people are capable of doing more and more awful shit. It's like you get desensitized. You get normalized. Like, people are very malleable. You get accustomed to all sorts of things.
Yes, and some of those things don't necessarily stay forever. They're subjective, you know, for that time and that moment. And plus, there is everything that's going around you. And if we're all in here and we're drinking coffee and we think that this is the way to be, and then everyone else are out and around us, and like, well, they're all drinking energy drinks. Well, the energy drinks are actually the best thing. Well, now there's this other thing that you see that perhaps then that bleeds into let's do energy drinks instead. And
yeah.
And if you go from that to, you know, let's drink grain alcohol. Well, maybe not.
Well, could be, yeah. I mean, sure. People just imitate their atmosphere.
And if someone else is, you know, God, in war, you know, if they take one of your teammates and then cut them to pieces and send them back to you, then all of a sudden, maybe you're going to do the same or then some, you know, reprisal.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to know a dude who he was a Mormon, and Mormons aren't allowed to drink coffee.
Well, I thought you were going to go somewhere else. I knew a dude, he was a Mormon. He used to cut people to pieces and send them.
No, he didn't do any of that. Yeah. I don't think.
Well, I mean, Mormons, they're just so friendly. Yeah. There's something got to be going on underneath.
There's a trigger that you got to find it.
puts a hole in there. They get a hole in their magic underwear, and they're just, that's it. Burn the fucking place down.
I offered him a cup of coffee. He's like, no, I can't drink coffee. And he had a fucking, one of those huge monster energy drinks.
Seriously?
Yeah. He was drinking them all day long to the point where he was having like heart problems. He's getting fucking heart palpitations. He was drinking. Oh no, it wasn't Monsters. It was Rock Stars. I wonder which one has more caffeine. Find out which one. I think Rockstar has more caffeine
than a Monster. Yeah.
Monster is doable. Like I'll drink a sugar free Monster during UFC broadcasts sometimes.
I drink those during the New Japan shows. They're 4 hours.
Yeah, but the problem is you got to piss. Whatever's in there goes right through your system.
Come right out. Like that caffeine ain't helping.
Goldberg used to drink those fucking things like they were water, and he was always peeing. Both Monster and Rockstar have the same amount of caffeine per serving, which is 80 milligrams per 8 ounces. Yeah, but what 80 is not that much.
If you look at
wow, that's crazy.
Rockstar list as being 240 at or something around there at the whole can, and Monster list as being 130.
Dude, this is 270.
Whoa.
Yeah, these little bad boys are 270.
God damn it, Tate! Yeah, you're trying to make me jump out of this chair.
Tate's trying to give people heart attacks.
Shout out to Tate Fletcher.
Shout out to Tate Fletcher and Caveman Coffee. Yeah. People are weird with trends, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like whatever the fuck happened to acid wash jeans. I was thinking that the other day. Like people used to love acid wash jeans. Remember they'd walk around with jeans with all splatters all over them.
And they're kind of making a bit of a comeback.
Are they?
Yeah.
Like fanny packs?
Yep. In of the same. You were ahead of the curve.
I'm way ahead of curve. I never left.
You're basically a late 80s pro wrestler.
Yeah, right? Like Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Right here, ladies and gentlemen, this bitch never left my side.
All leather.
Never left my side. This is real.
It was made from a bighorn sheep that you tracked down and shot with an arrow.
I wish. I should get one made. I've got these Axis deer hides out there. I should get one turned into a fanny pack. That'd be dope
as fuck. Leave the fur on it.
Fuck yeah, right? Yeah.
I hope you don't get any ticks.
No, there's no ticks on those. I don't think they have ticks in Hawaii. Maybe they do. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's weird, you know. But that's the thing about paradigms is you don't really realize it's, you know, when the paradigm is over until you're out of it,
right?
And so we're in a paradigm now of some sort, and it's easy to get lost in that and not be able to see outside it.
What do you think is happening now that will be ridiculed in the future?
Tough. I mean, I didn't think that in a lot of ways we would end up to where we are at this point in so many of the social and cultural elements, and that didn't even just specifically stay within the U.S., but seemed to be bleeding throughout all of Western society and civilization at large.
I got one word. Yeezys.
Yeezys?
Yeezys will be mocked.
Wait, that's his shoe, right?
That's just for Jamie. He loves those fucking things. He bought me a pair. I won't wear them. I told him next time I go running in the creeks, I'm going to wear them. Jamie loves these goddamn things.
Oh, okay. I'm not the hippest.
I still haven't tried them on. They still got the foam thing in there, bro.
Put them on.
Nope.
Yeezys?
Look at that. Come on. That looks like a sneaker from the 80s, right?
I wouldn't even say that.
What would you say?
This...
By the way, you're talking to a real man here.
That's fine.
Okay. Understand this?
Is that just like the bottom of a fucking...
Yeah, see?
He's liking them.
Of a
real man.
He's liking them.
Is one of those styrofoam Coleman coolers?
Yeah, close. Yeah. That's close. It's the bottom part.
It's the Ultra Boost.
The Ultra Boost.
What is this? This is like a glorified fucking water sock. This is like the thing you see some doofus with those frog skin things on his glasses to keep him from falling off.
Oh,
while he's wandering around in the, you know, I don't want to get too wet.
So you wouldn't wear those?
No.
Weird, Jamie.
Here's what I wear.
Weird how manly men.
I wear these.
That's right, motherfucker.
I wear Converse.
Chucks.
I wear Chuck Taylors.
Chucks.
Custom Chucks.
Fuck yeah.
With my logo on the side.
Woo!
As drawn by Dan Panosian.
Look at that.
Skulls and shit
like
this.
Look at that. Goddamn dirty, stinky Chucks.
I wear black metal t-shirts.
Fuck yeah. Look at that. See that? Chucks. Goddamn classics, Jamie. Not this. What is this? What the fuck's going on here?
It's comfort.
I bet they're comfortable as fuck.
Yeah, right.
They feel soft.
They're like Crocs.
While I'm wearing them, I'm like, damn, I should probably put these on when no one's looking.
Goddamn. It's like being like you're just wearing Angelina Jolie's titties, right?
It's a big ass soles. Yeah, they look comfortable. Stop the pitch.
Fillers.
I could see JP in some Yeezys.
What's that?
Yeah, I could see JP in some Yeezys.
JP?
Yeah, Jordan Peterson.
Jordan Peterson in some Yeezys?
Oh, yeah.
I could see him wearing some atrocious sandals when no one's looking. Like, what are you wearing, man? You'd have to talk to him. Take those off.
With like some wool socks on
underneath them. Yeah.
Some Tevas.
Jamie and I were talking about this the other day. You're allowed to wear socks with slides. You know, slides.
There's
no toe thing.
You're allowed to. Who says?
Guys wear them all the time.
Fuck that noise. The fuck is that about?
I don't know. It's a thing. No, but you can't it's wear not them
allowed.
Flip-flops.
No, it's not allowed.
Guys wear them all the time.
No, keep your socks out of your sandals.
We were just in Vegas, and there was some basketball thing going on there. There was a bunch of basketball players.
Okay.
Half of them. Half of them had slides with socks.
Here's the deal with that, though. I can at least say, as an athlete, that maybe they've got their slides on because they're going to take those slides off and put their basketball shoes right on. So for them, it's like I'm out of uniform at the moment, but I'm ready to go to combat basketball-wise at any moment. I don't know. But in general, as far as a fashion trend, fuck that noise.
But
it looks ridiculous.
Trend amongst like rappers. I see rappers wearing those things with socks.
It just looks like you just – I don't know.
Like you're giving up.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Why don't you just wear sweatpants all day too?
Like you're a dude with a wife beater with your gut hanging out of the bottom of it, and you're just fucking kicking back.
Fuck it. I can't even bend over and tie my shoes.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
about.
Can't
even clasp the Velcro on my Yeezys.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't have Velcro, do they?
I guess you don't need a real shoe if you throw on, you walk out with your socks on, you throw on your sliders and get on your hoverboard or fucking your electric scooter and you.
Would you ever drive a Tesla?
I would drive a Tesla. But, you know, I got one of my beefs, not with Teslas per se in any way, but I would say be talking about cars with somebody out and about and we'll have some conversation and I'll bring up some car or we'll be talking about something like the Dodge. No, it wasn't the Demon when the Hellcat came out. And so like, oh, yeah, those Hellcats, I've heard amazing things about how not only is it obviously incredibly powerful and fast, but that they're massively comfortable. It's a GT car. You could grand tour it all over the U.S. and be comfy the whole time. And
smooth riding car.
And they're like, oh, but you know, what about the Tesla? I'm like, that's another $40,000 to $50,000 more. Oh, it's almost. I heard it's as fast, if not faster. I go, if I'm paying over $100,000 for a car, it better be fast. It better have all of this shit. Like, and I would talk about certain other. And a lot of times, it's like, my Firebird doesn't cost that much, dude. I don't care if that Tesla wins. You just spent $150,000 on a car.
Okay, but what if cost wasn't an option? What if you were Elon Musk?
If I'm Elon Musk, well, God, I don't think he can not drive a Tesla. If he's out there in a goddamn 3-inch exhaust, 470, big block Pontiac, people are like, what the fuck?
Yeah, he probably can't drive anything but Teslas.
Right. And
oh, what a trap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For real.
Good. But like,
Porsche, I would rather drive a car. I don't feel like electric cars have souls. They don't have any. There's like nothing that doesn't. It's like beep, beep, boop, 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 bop, and then the little printer comes out, and it just doesn't do it for me.
Well, they're really cool, but at the end of the day, there's a problem. The problem is it feels good to hear the rumble of an engine. And to fucking put that clutch in and pop that gear. What is that?
Elon's two gas cars he owns, a Model T.
A Jag.
And a Jag.
That's an old school Jag. That's a 60s
Jag. That's a badass
car.
Jag.
He's got a little hard top.
It's probably a V12, actually.
Those are amazing.
His first love.
Wow. Oh, it's a Roadster. Okay, so that top pops off. Wow. That's a shape, man. Look at that
thing.
That's
incredible.
What year was that?
E-Type. Oh, wow. Yeah, it's
something in the 60s? God,
67, yeah.
67.
That's a gorgeous car.
Oh, it's so pretty. Let me see that picture again. Scroll down. Oh, look at that. Yeah, but there's something about the sound of combustion engines. Just, it's so magnetic. Teslas are cool. They're silent.
I'm sure they're incredibly comfortable.
Oh, yeah. And that pad, the big-ass iPad that you mm-hmm. have where your navigation screen is, I mean, it is the shit. Well, you're driving and that thing, and you just ask it to play songs, and it pulls them up on Spotify.
I'm also a little weirded out by the over-electronic element of modern life. I realize the usefulness of it, but I always think about, you know, when some shit goes south, like, I can't just fix it. And we right. keep going. Or if something goes bad, it could go bad in a lot of different ways. And there's a chain of command of bad that it's all linked to that it could go to as well. And so I'm just like, it just doesn't. And plus, when you talk about engines, all right, you start up your Porsche.
Right.
You start up a Vette. You start up an LS motor. And then you start it up next to a big block Pontiac. You start it up next to a big block Ford. And everything has a different feel, a different cam that's in it makes it sound different, makes it operate different. The exhaust that's on, everything changes based on all kinds of different elements. And so the car, even of itself, not just the exterior of it, but the internals make it seem like a different vehicle.
Yeah, for sure. Like, have you ever been around a Ferrari?
Not a ton, no. But I know they have.
They got this sound like. Mm-hmm. They got their own.
Aston Martin is famous for having a very specific exhaust note.
There's sounds that they have. It's like a celebration.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, better not drive it too far because it's probably going to break. But
before the next 12 minutes, this is fantastic.
Oh,
like it.
The way they sound. Like, I used to love Top Gear with Jeremy Clarkson.
Oh,
Jeremy
it was a great Clarkson. Show.
Yeah. He's the best. Whoever he punched, he said sorry.
Yeah,
do the
get
show
over
again.
It. Get over it.
What the
it.
Fuck is wrong
along.
With you, BBC?
Who can't take
assholes?
A punch nowadays?
Yeah,
a punch, a slap?
It's what you were talking about earlier. People are pussified. They're pussified. And they're playing tough. They're doing a goddamn car show with a bunch of men drinking booze.
Mm-hmm.
You guys got in a fight and you got hit.
Well,
okay, take a little settlement.
Move on.
Give the man
take
some
an apology
paper.
or even just say, hey, let me hit you one back.
Yeah.
Fine.
I wish I was there.
You get
I
your own.
Said, Jeremy, how much money do you got? What do you got in the bank? $60-70 million.
Well,
give the man a million.
People wanting to sort of live at parents' house for the rest of their life, except then it goes from being mom and dad to them being a state of some sort that does all your work for you because you don't want to have to take the responsibility of either winning or of losing that confrontation maybe.
Well, I think he just got punched.
Jeremy was
a drunk asshole.
Well, maybe so, but
I don't know if it's bad.
If it's on Jeremy, he could just go to me like, all right, dude, I get one on you.
Yeah.
And it's even. We're done.
Right.
I move on with my life.
Right. But what if the guy can fucking crack? What if the guy hits like Paul Daly?
You shouldn't have fucking hit him then, huh? You shouldn't have fucking hit him.
Shouldn't have hit him, period.
Yeah, at all.
Well, that's the realm of people that don't practice martial arts. Like, how many people get drunk and get in fist fights that actually know how to fight? It's pretty small.
According to the internet, it's real small when you watch those fucking stupid Street Fight videos.
It's always people that don't have any idea what they're doing. You know, they think it's. I'm always amazed at people's overestimation of what they can do with their body, especially when it pertains to animals, like what you would do if an animal is coming at you. Or like, you know what my favorite thing to watch is? One of my favorite things of the last couple weeks, I got to stop. I watch fucking Running with the Bulls.
Oh, man.
When is that? Is that in the spring?
That's actually this week, I think. I have a bunch of friends over there. They're going to do that.
Oh, no. Call them. Call them. Tell them you love them. Tell them to get the fuck out of there. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Hey, let's get this two-ton animal fucking
I just don't think people understand, A, how strong those things are, and B, how shitty their body works. People have this idea. Oh, they come at me, bro. I'm going to fucking just get out of the way.
And I'll just sidestep it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you're on these slick, beer-soaked. What is this, Jamie?
Is the end of it.
Is this right now?
Yeah, it's the 6th of the 14th.
It's happening right now. I can't believe it. I've been watching videos. I didn't know it was actually live.
This is on Instagram. This is
so fucking insane. This is so insane. People are so insane.
And what if it gets a beat on you and then all of a sudden they go, nope, you're the only one out of this entire crowd of 500 people right now that it wants to gore?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if it finds one that sits still, it's going to take its frustrations out. And the crazy thing is, look how many people are there watching this and watching these fools running around in the middle of this bullfight.
I want to see someone get fucked up by a bull.
Have you ever watched a bullfight?
I have not. I have seen plenty of clips, footage of it, what have you, but I've never watched a bullfight.
Yeah, I'm not interested.
Didn't really do anything for me.
No.
I mean, I can, up until the point of killing it, Like, okay, you want to go out there and dodge a bull? Seems like a bad idea, but all right. But then, you know, all right, you've already proven that you can maneuver yourself out of the way. No need to spear it and kill it.
Yeah, it also seems to me that...
I know it's tradition. I know it comes from a different era. I know I understand that. And so I'm not going to sit here and just like go railroading bullfighting necessarily.
The Inquisition is tradition, too.
Well, that's,
you know, there's a lot of things that are
pretty successful. Yeah.
There's a lot of horrific traditions. It just seems to me to be a bastardization of our relationship with animals. Like, even – I don't think there's anything wrong with domesticated animals.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously factory farming is this disgusting aberration.
Nasty. Why do it? I mean, and there is no – it's possible to have animals that are able to live a more – natural way of life than it is to jam them into a cage and force feed them until
I don't know if it's possible to do it the way we've been doing it, though.
Well,
the real problem is the way we expect to be able to just go to Jack in the Box and get a burger.
Well, we eat too much meat.
Yeah.
In general, I think that your average person doesn't need to eat nearly as much fucking varieties of meat as they do. They definitely need meat in their diet, I believe, on average.
Do you know about the carnivore diet?
Now, see, here's the thing. I've been I heard you talking to
Jordan
you've talked a lot about, and then Jordan Peterson and his daughter.
Well,
as
I talked
well.
About it with Chris Bell first, mm-hmm. who's been on it for – I think he's been on it for at least 6 months or so, and he's having radical improvements. And one of the reasons that he's having improvements and then Jordan's having tremendous results – and Jordan's daughter as well is arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
They all have arthritis.
Yes.
Like Chris Bell has two
smelly.
Artificial hips.
Oh, I don't doubt it. Yeah. Trying to be that.
Mark is smelly.
Oh, Mark is smelly.
Mark's
Chris
the big
is,
one. Chris is Boar. Chris Boar Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Chris is the one who produced Bigger, Stronger, Faster.
I met Chris.
Thugs.
I've actually never met Mark.
They're great
in person,
guys.
But yeah,
they're
Chris is a fantastic. Always got his backward baseball cap on.
Yeah. They're both fantastic guys and really, really smart and just. Chris has suffered from serious debilitating arthritis and pain in his joints his whole life. Having a carnivore diet knocked it out for him.
And that's
the only thing.
I was familiar with the ketogenic diet and all that kind of stuff. And having a higher – it works for me as well, to be honest, to eat that way. My problem is my love affair with fucking breads.
Yeah, that's a problem.
You're out there getting a coffee maybe in the morning. You're like, God damn, that looks like an amazing croissant right now.
Ooh,
you know
chocolate?
How it looks even better? In my face.
Do you like chocolate croissant?
I do like chocolate croissants.
You know,
like
you know who's got the best ones?
Hmm.
Coffee bean. Those Starbucks ones can suck my dick.
You know what?
How
I don't eat
that?
Croissants. I don't eat. I'm a Seattle guy, but I don't eat Starbucks croissants.
You don't?
No.
They're terrible. They used to be okay. They used to be pretty good. You know when they went south and they started putting them in plastic bags? They give them to you and they're already sealed up in a plastic bag? Blah. No. See, the ones at Coffee Bean have way more chocolate in them. They're thick. If you're going to go deep, go deep. That's what I say.
I go to the off, you know, the non-chain coffee shops that will like coffee and food and coffee commissary.
There's a place down the street here, a Russian bakery.
Oh.
They have these chocolate croissants that will knock your dick right into the dirt.
I can bet.
Woo! They're thick, rich, and delicious. Yeah, I'll
get
travel
a number.
For them. They got good coffee, too.
But if I stick to eating... In a more ketogenic way, I feel better. My joints hurt less. I lose fat easier, but I still can put on muscle mass. It is a better way for me to eat. And I don't know if there is something about our genetic makeups. Say me, you, JP. We probably have some crossover similarity there.
Yeah,
I don't
I think
know
so.
If there's anything to do with that. I just know that it's been useful to me. And I've seen it be, you know, that's the way you eat. I've heard Jordan talk about his daughter and how useful it's been for her. And as you mentioned.
She's another one. I mean, she's had her ankle replaced, her hip replaced.
She has like an autoimmune thing, right?
As does he. It's the same exact mm-hmm. issue. And an autoimmune issue is also what this radical arthritis is. I mean, there's so many people have these issues. And these are isolated incidences, you know, isolated issues that people have. But, you know, I know people that thrive off vegetarian diets. They have no problem with it.
Yeah.
I think vegetarian is the way to go for a lot of people that are thinking about being vegan. Don't be scared of eggs, folks. Just get eggs.
Eggs are good for you.
Eggs are great for you. Just all this fucking PETA propaganda where they call them chicken periods. Look, if you don't want to kill animals, I get it. I get it. I love animals. Get free-range eggs. You can get them at the fucking farmer's market, and they have a dark orange yolk, and they're fucking great
for you.
They're
amazing.
And the chickens don't even notice they're gone. They don't give a fuck.
No, chickens are going to have eggs no matter what. Yeah, they just lay them. Unless there's a rooster exactly. there to fertilize it, they're just going to fucking lay eggs.
Yeah, it's just free food. It's like a gift that they give you for
chickens.
Taking care of them.
I used to own chickens. Yeah.
I had 6 eggs this morning for breakfast.
They're incredible. They're great. Thicker and heavier. Yeah. And
it's actually good for you.
And of all things, one of their favorite little snacks, it's something that they just absolutely love, eggs.
Yeah, they'll chickens, fuck up an egg.
Chickens love scrambled eggs.
Yeah, you know what they really love? They love shells. They love to fuck
oyster
up egg shells.
Yeah, and eggshells, yeah.
You know what they love more than that? Mice.
Mice, lizards.
They'll fuck up.
They're vicious little fuckers, yeah.
But you know what they don't fuck with? Squirrels.
Well, they're a little big.
Yeah, but they just don't even try. Like, the squirrel's like a rat. You know, it's basically a rat. Everybody loves squirrels, even chickens.
It's that bushy tail.
It's crazy. That bushy tail's all you needed, that cute haircut. And
just a little snap and a wink and,
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I had 4 chickens, and one time there was a little miniature chihuahua, or a little mini dachshund, maybe, or a it was a minpin, and it got into the yard. And ended up in the backyard, and the 4 chickens cornered it and wouldn't let it leave. And so it's back there whining and yelping, and eventually my ex at the time went and got the dog and then tried to figure out whose it was and what have you. And it turned out it was chipped, I think, and it got given somewhere where someone could then track them down. But it was just hilarious that these chickens were like, fuck you, motherfucker, you're in the wrong place.
You know who else loves squirrels? My dog.
That's a different animal altogether.
That's Marshall.
They hardly ever catch him, though.
He got that one. It was like this sweet golden retriever, this kind dog who loves everybody. Yeah, he likes fucking up squirrels, too. Well, the problem is the squirrels go into the chicken coop. Mm-hmm. They'll find a way into the chicken coop, and they steal all the chicken's food. And Marshall just decided to wait outside the chicken coop because he knew where the hole was. He's just sitting there. And boom! Snatch that motherfucker.
And then he's just with the biggest shit-eating grin on his face.
Yeah, Mrs. Rogan does not like the squirrels. She doesn't like the squirrels getting into the chicken food. To me, I feel like we just buy more chicken food. The poor little squirrels out there hustling. It's a hard life being a squirrel.
It is.
Just trying to get coyotes, you know, just trying to get by.
Yeah.
Trying to live your life.
They're out there. You know? They're all this peer pressure from all these other squirrels. And they start smoking young.
Yeah, they find this sweet spot where all these fucking nuts and all this grain is. Like, this is amazing.
Yeah, there's issues with squirrel gang activity.
You know when they fucked up, though? They started stealing eggs. They steal eggs. These cunts were trying to roll eggs out of the chicken coop. That's when she got mad. Yeah, I had no idea that squirrels ate eggs. Then we started finding videos online. Jamie pulled up a bunch of videos of squirrels rolling chicken eggs out of a chicken.
I never heard of that either.
Yeah, they do. The motherfuckers, we have egg boxes. They're elevated egg boxes, okay? The egg boxes are like 2.5-3 feet off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
The squirrels got up into the egg box, got the egg, chucked it out of the egg box, lands on the ground. They're getting it, and they're rolling the egg.
Oh, they're clever little fuckers.
Sneaky.
And they're cute, so they're like, I can get away with anything.
They do get away with more.
Yeah.
Like rats must be like, what in the fuck, man?
We're
this is
smart
bullshit.
As shit. We're
way smarter.
Yeah. And yet people fucking want to just stab us left and right.
Yeah. There's no industry for squirrel killing. Like,
no, not really. Maybe in the deep south, and that's not an industry.
There's a lot of guys out there that get their mortgages paid by killing rats. Like, they're driving around in a nice car from killing rats all day. There's no one, and nobody cares. Nobody feels bad. Like, oh, I'm an exterminator. We're all racist when it comes to certain animals and bugs, right? People collect butterflies. Nobody stomp roaches. Everybody stomps roaches and swats mosquitoes.
Yeah, well, fuck mosquitoes. Those things, they will give you
everything.
You know, all kinds of diseases and shit.
Dengue fever, malaria.
The only part of a mosquito's life I enjoy or think is interesting is when they're larvae and they're these fucking vicious little things with these giant hooked teeth that can even eat little fish and all that kind of stuff in the ponds.
Dude, when I first moved to California, I rented this house in Encino, and nobody lived in it for like a year and a half, 2 years, something like that. And they had a pool in the backyard that was just sitting there with no chemicals in it. It wasn't just green. There was schools of mosquito larvae swimming around like fish. I went out into the yard. I was like, what the fuck is that? And the guy was like, oh, we'll take care of that. I go, what is that?
How do you take care of that?
He goes, yeah. Oh, you poison the shit out of that water. You just
pour bleach into it, yeah.
Well, the first thing you do is you bleach it. Then you got to drain it. You gotta take all,
because, scoop all that shit out.
Yeah, you gotta drain all that water out. They had to bring like a machine, and then they had to clean all the fucking the bottom of the pool. It was all green and funky. But the crazy thing is, they were moving through the water like, you know how you see those big flocks of birds?
Yes.
And they all move together. Yes. They were doing that in the water. There was fucking thousands of them. It was crazy.
Good thing they didn't grow legs.
Oh, it would have been a real problem. It would have been a real problem if they got out and started flying around. I would have got fucked up.
There's a meme out there, and I think it's a picture, and it's repeated in on the bottom as well, of a PETA billboard, and it's got these animals all standing in a line, and it says, "Where do you draw the line between food and friend or whatever?" And then someone else has, and then they've got the same thing down there, and it's like, this is normal food, this is a catastrophic event, apocalypse.
I've seen that. Yeah. Well, being a vegetarian or a vegan is a very first world option. The reason why people got to this point is because we figured out a way to survive eating all the animals around us, just like they figured out a way to survive eating the animals around them.
Well, and any of the argument that, this culture is mostly vegetarian or vegan or this or that, and it's like, okay, well, it's also highly based on what was available.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't just say, I don't want to hurt the animals.
Well, the only people that did is the Hindu.
Yeah.
Hindus are fascinating. And there's a lot of speculation as to why.
Historically, a pretty developed civilization at certain points in time in comparison to the rest of the world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you go back and read the Bhagavad Gita. I mean, they had some really complex philosophy and really interesting thoughts about the universe. But a lot of people believe that was due to psychedelic drugs. And one of the reasons why they believe they had this interesting relationship with cattle but not with lamb was because cattle shit would grow magic mushrooms on it. This is because soma is a big part of ancient Hindu folklore and their religion and their ancient texts. They talk about soma, and soma was some sort of a psychedelic mixture. And they don't know exactly what it was, but they know that Hindus a lot of the ancient Hindu text, they deal with some sacraments. And they know that they were into hash, and like a lot of the yogis, the sadhus, they're into chillums. They smoke chillums of hash. So they knew they were into hash, but they think that their aversion to eating cows may have had something to do with the fact that these cows would shit, and then the mushrooms would grow out of cow shit, and then they would eat these mushrooms and have these profound experiences.
Right.
And so that they thought of these cows as conduits to God.
Right.
But then there's also they probably drank the milk, and, they probably used them to plow the fields to grow their food. So it's interesting, because when a culture has an aversion to eating a very specific animal, and that specific animal also is the main source of psychedelic mushrooms, to ignore that connection seems a little bit weird.
No, I don't think it's arbitrary. I think it's something that would be worth investigating, right? I mean, why not? And worst case scenario, you come down to you have to figure out something else. But
look at Shiva, right? You see that picture of Shiva? The Shiva has
six
arms, and Shiva's standing on like a little. It looks like a baby. And I have a giant bronze Shiva in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And when I bought it, the lady said, "This Shiva is standing on ignorance." This is what it's supposed to be. I go, I thought ignorance would be way bigger than that. It felt like ignorance would be like a dragon, and Shiva was like fighting. It was much larger than him. But when you – that thing that Shiva's doing, that's what happens when you trip your balls off. Okay, if you trip balls and you were started moving your arms around, I would think, Josh Barnett's got six arms. This is crazy. There's so much of ancient Hindu artwork that is.
I thought they were just fanning a bad fart.
Could be that.
It's like Jesus.
That's what all the fire around it. Maybe that's what it is. They're lighting matches. But the ancient Hindu art. There's this iconography. There's like these iconic imagery this iconic imagery that you see when you do psychedelics. You see a lot of this stuff, particularly on mushrooms for some reason.
Yeah.
You'll see like ancient Hindu and sometimes ancient Egyptian shit too.
Well, I know, you know, you can see – you'll see geometric shapes appear out of – and, you know, to me, I'm just like, well, that's just what you see when you're poisoned. But it's a great – it's an interesting way of looking at it.
But it's not poison. That's the thing about it.
It's the way it's affecting the way you're processing it.
Yeah, perturbance of your visual cortex. Yeah, but it's not poison. That's the crazy thing. It's like the LD50 of mushrooms, it's almost impossible to eat yourself to death.
Mm.
Like you'd have to eat your own body weight. Like you would get way too stuffed.
Put them inside those fucking croissants, those chocolate croissants.
No, you're talking. That might be the move. Soma, kill somebody with mushrooms.
That's a term that has continued to go throughout.
Yeah, it's like a sleeping pill now,
well,
right?
Yeah, and then it was also a major element within Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, which
I think that was based on that.
Probably so. I'm firmly of a belief that what we're living in is not a Orwellian potential dystopic future. We're living in a Huxley version, because Huxley and Orwell both saw it from two different ways. And Orwell was more of the – there would be force and violence and direct suppression of individuals and groups and retraining. Now, there is thought policing and you know, even though they call them equity, diversity, whatever departments, I mean, there are people that are there to – you know, they have these cabals that try to force everybody to be in line, but it's, you know, they're not necessarily gassing folks or beating on them or what have you, shock therapy. However, Huxley's version of how this would all go badly was that everybody would be so comfortable, that there would be so much luxury and pleasure, and that you would just not fight back.
Yeah.
Anything that they would try to impart upon you, the way they would get you to do it is just make your life even softer and even easier.
Yeah, Huxley was right in that regard. And also, there's so little danger in the world and so little real drama that we look for drama.
Of course.
We look for it all over the place. And that's we've made the world, what's going on.
Most of the world, very, very safe, especially for at least for us in the first world nations.
There's something that Dave Rubin tweeted today. See if you could find this. It's real recent that the mayor
about
of
Star
Durham,
Wars?
I don't think so.
No,
the
not
mayor
that
of Durham apparently said something about Jordan Peterson, that Jordan Peterson is not welcome in Durham, North Carolina, because of his transphobic and racist views.
What?
Yeah, what is he? Let's see. I can't read that, man. Can you make that a little larger?
What a fucking misrepresented person Jordan Peterson has become.
Well,
it's got to be blatant.
It's very strange. We believe that Durham is a place for all of us, black, white, Asian, Latinx. Oh, I like how he went Latinx instead of Latino, because if you say Latinx, it's like Latina, Latino. You get
like
it?
All the Latinos, yeah.
I'm not taking any chances. Indigenous and mixed race, trans and cis. Cis isn't a real word. You're getting crazy, Mayor. Gay and lesbian, queer and straight. This is the thing.
Queer doesn't cover all of it anymore.
What is queer? I'm always confused by that. It's got a very open, vague term.
I mean, and maybe there is maybe there's some sort of accepted standard for what defines queer versus
what about
gay
able,
and
what about asexual? Is that all right? How come he didn't put that in? Asexual people, you should march.
Now they're fucked.
Attack.
Yeah, the asexual activist lobby is coming for
those who seek to exclude or deny the humanity of others will find no comfort
that's
here.
That's always an interesting statement that people like to make. Deny the humanity. Like, who said that who's denying your humanity? Even assholes, right? I mean, even someone that's just a prick. It's like they can't – you just heard it and responded to it. You're living the life that you want to live. How can they deny your humanity?
Well, look at this. We wish to emphasize that a person's right to free speech does not include the right to a platform or an audience. Well, here's the thing. You can't deny that people are listening to him and enjoy his work. But if you're going to make these broad statements, you have to have some sort of evidence to back up what you're saying. I know Jordan Peterson, and he's definitely not a racist.
No. Nope.
He's definitely not transphobic or homophobic or any of those things. He was against compelled speech.
Yes, state-compelled speech.
State-compelled speech, meaning that there was a bunch of different words that they were forcing people to use that were these new gender pronouns, and they were compelling.
Right.
And they have human rights councils in Canada, and he's a clinical psychologist, and he's very well read, and he understands like Marxism and all the pitfalls.
Postmodernism and neo-Marxism and its evolution from classical Marxism and how it's been influenced, the difference between emphasizing the superstructure over the base. Yeah,
this is just virtue signaling in its worst form.
I am a very, very familiar with JP's work. He actually sent me a copy of his book through Twitter.
Oh, that's amazing.
Which was fantastic. But the way I came across Jordan Peterson was that as a big fan of Nietzsche and his philosophical writings. So I'd go on YouTube to see if I could find lectures on Nietzsche. And in his Maps of Meaning lectures, and this is before any of the the issues with BLC 16, really, I didn't know about any of that. I was just listening to Jordan Peterson lectures because of him referencing and talking about Nietzsche. Mm. So, and then from Nietzsche to Dostoevsky and all this, and he would then start to talk a lot about Marxism and communism and postmodernism in reference to each other in other ways, and then the C16 stuff, and then I was living with a Marxist for a while, so I started.
Were you really?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it was not fun. So, but at the same time, I had to try to understand what the arguments that were being made and why, and so you got to go research them. So if someone says, the wage gap, blah, 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 I'm like, okay, well, I guess I need to look up the research on what that is. And then you come back and you go, oh, well, that's actually not an apples for apples comparison, and it's not 70 cents on the dollar. And you just go into it, and then they just look at you and they go, no. It's like, I read – what's your source? Well, this thing. I read that source. It doesn't talk about education level, job for job, hours worked. Like it doesn't – I mean, no one's saying that things couldn't be better.
Yeah, people who haven't heard this argument before, when you hear about the wage gap, the gender wage gap, it's not people doing the same job. This is the best way to say it. It's not people doing the same job, and it's not people working the same hours. The reason why men make more money is they do different jobs. Well, now, are those jobs more difficult for women to get is the real question.
Some of them, I imagine they are. Perhaps. I mean, I never doubt that there is a potential sexism or any sort of ism to some degree in something.
There's sexism coming from both sides of the tracks, too, by the way. There's
sexism. And how many women want to be working on a fucking oil rig out in the middle of, or doing pipelines up in frozen North Dakota or something? I mean, and how many of them are physically capable of doing the work, too?
Right.
Which isn't a woman's fault at all.
No.
And you can't, I wouldn't hold it against anybody. And if they didn't, if they did not want to choose to do that kind of employment, there's nothing wrong with that either.
No.
You know, if a woman wanted to go off and make artisan soap, right? That motherfucker could make the best soap with essential oils that are the best for, like, you know, like how you use defense soap stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, if that was a woman that came and created all that, like, that's a valuable, respectable, fantastic thing that they just made.
It doesn't require physical strength. Anybody can do that.
Don't diminish the accomplishments of someone else just because it doesn't fit what you think is.
Well, the problem is when we get into teams, man. I mean, toxic tribalism is the real problem. The real problem is people get into teams, whether it's male versus female, and this mayor of Durham guaranteed
it's weaponizing. A lot of the stuff is weaponized. So most of the stuff about the patriarchy, which I'm also in agreement with Jordan Peterson, you know, that doesn't exist. That's not the way the human history has rolled out. I don't buy that at all. Not to end or the wage gap. These are weaponized things. They use them in a weaponized way to try and destroy your argument or your position or your way of being. It's a weaponized.
They diminish your point of view by saying, it's your white privilege talking.
Something
Josh,
like
you
that.
You got a lot of white privilege too, dude.
I am so white.
You're a big white guy too.
I am very, very
extra white.
White
privilege.
I have with a red beard.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, from the Pacific Northwest. How much more white can you
can't get?
Get
any whiter, bro.
If I get any whiter, I'm going to be wearing fucking Birkenstocks with socks on.
You should
and
shave
I'll have a ponytail and
man bun. You should have a man bun.
Wow.
Man bun is a bold ponytail,
but these terms are used in conflict. Well, and when why wouldn't they be? Because most of the source material, the creation of these sort of ideological viewpoints are from postmodernist neo-Marxism, and mm-hmm. it's all based on concept of conflict theory. So there's always going to be an oppressor and an oppressed. So if you, what you are doing is a, is trying to argue with or even just make your case to someone who's an oppressor, well, it would be weaponized because as far as you're concerned, everything they do is weaponized against you.
Right.
So you've already chosen a confrontational position.
Yeah, there's also a problem with people wanting to be right. And
well,
I think
yeah, that's human nature.
Well, I also, like, whether it's someone who's a postmodernist or someone who's a staunch conservative,
mm-hmm.
people go into any discussion with a presupposed or they have a preordained or they have a collected group of ideas that they have attached themselves to.
Correct.
And they do not want to let those go.
No.
And you have yours and I have mine. It's very difficult for people to just talk. And very difficult for people to just – someone to lay out their position and someone else to lay out their position and two people to like cordially discuss the merits of each position with an open mind. It happens so rarely and it's something I try so hard to do. And it's something that – it took me years to cultivate the mindset to not have these pre-existing conditions mm-hmm. or pre-existing ideas, or if I do have them – don't attach myself to them and be ready to abandon them at any moment, like under new evidence.
Sure. And there's no problem in saying, okay, well, I believe A and you believe B and we both believe them to be correct. Well, tell me why A is incorrect.
Or better yet, tell me why you believe what you believe.
Right. You know, give me some reason.
What are the facts?
Give me something.
Yeah.
And
let's find if those facts are real.
Right. And I used to, I'd have these conversations with this person I was living with, I would say, they're like, well, you just always have to be right. I go, no, I don't have to be right. But if you're going to make a claim, you're going to have to defend your argument and I'll defend mine. But ultimately, I don't care if I'm wrong because being wrong only means that I can then perhaps work towards a way of having the most understanding that I can have. We as human beings are wrong so much more than we're ever right. But by being wrong, by making mistakes, it's like through martial arts, by being on the mats. And, you know, God, I'm going to get this guy's ankle right now. Ah, fuck that up. Oh, I got caught. Oh, fuck that up. You can't get to the point to where you're like, oh, this is how you set it up. This is the way that you can. I wasn't securing the knee well enough, so it was always sliding out of position. I couldn't, you know, keep the leg framed in such a position where when I applied my hold, the pressure went to the joint that I needed it to. None of that happens until you make mistake after mistake after mistake after
yeah.
mistake. And there's nothing wrong with before making moving forward on something to sit back and to study a little bit and to try and understand somewhat of the landscape. But eventually, the only thing you can do is you just got to go, right? Mm. You know, paralysis through analysis isn't going to help you either.
Well, I lived a good portion of my life wanting to be right always.
Sure.
And it's a toxic mindset. It's terrible for you. It's terrible for you because you don't grow and then you have to live in denial and then you have to always tell yourself that you were right and they were wrong, even if you get, you know, out debated or even if you're faced with new evidence, you try to ignore that new evidence.
Mm-hmm.
I know the mindset. I lived in it for many
years.
It's
easy to be in.
Yeah.
It's an easy place to
it's
be
normal.
In. And, you know, not
it's to hard
back
to go,
on.
It's hard to relax yourself
yes.
and just realize that you are not facts. You are not your ideas. You are not your opinions. You're you. And if you attach yourself to these opinions, these ideas, like you're going to – it's a fucking trap. Like you have to know what – like here's something I know for a fact. This wood is hard.
Mm-hmm.
If I've hit this wood with my knuckles, this shit's hard. If it dropped on you, it would hurt.
Mm-hmm.
These are undeniable facts. And there's a gang of those that you have in the world. There's a gang of undeniable facts.
That's what I call operational objectivity.
Like, yeah. Whether or not Marxism can be successfully implemented in a large scale with a sensitive, compassionate group of human beings that all live together. Whew. Can it? I don't know.
Doesn't seem to be.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, though. See what I'm saying? Like, it hasn't been done before. Socialism never really worked. But can it work? The argument that it can't work seems to me that doesn't make any sense either. Like maybe it could work.
Well,
like,
the argument that it could work is that.
But see what I'm saying? Like these are like really
well, you need to think about
broad, it. Yeah, complex, nuanced concepts that need to be discussed up and down and back
correct.
And forth. And you also need to look at the weight of human history, the myriad times it's failed.
Right. And just human history, and even in ways which is not directly related to, say, Marxism, but just to look at patterns and trends and ways of people of operating and to see how, okay, well, given a different circumstance, how would that process work within this one or in this one or in this one or in yeah. this one? And then even if you wanted to say, well, if you're like, well, I don't think Marxism will work. Well, but you can't say that until you actually study what Marxism is and what its principles are, because if you don't understand the argument, and this is like, you know, John Stuart Mill, you can't just defend your side without knowledge of the other.
Yes.
You have really no position to your position isn't any better than theirs.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, I think everybody should do that no matter what you're looking at, like whatever you're trying to defend. Look at even if it's something horrible, even if it's like a racist position, find out why these people support this.
Because
like,
they believe it, right? Yeah. And so why do they believe this racist position? What is it about them that they think gives it validity? And you can look at it and go, I could see where they could take this way to its extreme, and that's nonsensical, but you see where it started. Or you can see like that's everything about this is clearly driven by something else and not what they claim. So,
well, it's also one of the things about societies that we really have to take into consideration is the momentum of the past. Mm-hmm. Like this country has unique freedom to it because it was literally created by people who decided to get on a boat and risk traveling across the ocean to some new land.
Yes.
It's a country filled with savages, like crazy people that took wild chances and did wild things because of it. And if you look at the history of this country, that's clearly established by, look at the art, look at the music, look at the things that have come out, the comedy, all these things that have been created, the cars, all the different things that have come out of this one place. And this one place just happens to be the most recent place with the least amount of historical baggage.
Yes.
But then you look at the places that have the most amount of historical baggage, like Africa or some parts of Russia. And like these are places that have the hardest time breaking out of the weight of the cultural momentum of the past. You know, it's very difficult for people to radically change an established system that has existed for 1,000 years.
Well, that's true. And if you were to think about, communism and the Soviet states in the length of what constitutes human history has only been gone for it was around for a short time and it's only been gone for an even shorter time.
And it's not really like it's gone, but it's still a dictatorship over there.
I guess there's elements of that.
Russia. Did you hear about that lady in Iran she's going to jail
the dancing,
for 8 years
the singer?
For fucking dancing? Yeah. Oh no. The Egyptian girl the Lebanese girl's going to jail for she made a YouTube video about getting sexually harassed in Egypt.
Okay.
So they sentenced her to 8 years in prison. She's 22 years old.
Holy
it's fucking
shit.
Terrifying. She's a 22, 24 or something like that. She's young. And they sentenced her to 8 fucking years
in
jail.
See, that's the people here in America or Western civilization at large just fucking – they just put on the blinders about stuff like that. It's like there are places – and I'm not going to, demonize these places either. But at the same time, you as a 22-year-old could have a complaint and say, hey, I am like, this thing happened and this is fucked up. And all of a sudden they can go, huh, you think that was fucked up? Boom, and throw your ass in jail or have you executed or whatever. I mean, it's like, okay, well, I guess I don't have the right to express myself. Whereas, people will show up and bang on doors and do all kinds of crazy shit when Jordan Peterson comes and does a talk. And the thing is, they're allowed to. They're allowed to protest what he has to say, counter-protest if they want, or to express their unhappiness with things political and things media. Anybody can say what they want in terms of what makes them unhappy without fear of the government silencing you.
Right.
That's a major thing.
It's a major thing. And this poor girl in Iran, she's just dancing. That's... people that always rail against Islam or Islamophobia, there's so much Islamophobia in this world. Yeah, sure there is. You're right, there is. But you know what else there is? There's also radical Islam and radical Islamic governments that are putting women in jail because they fucking dance.
Well, religious
that's
zealotry.
That's happening right now.
It's just religious zealotry. Yeah. And while people will often we'll get into a conversation about this and they'll bring up, well, what about the Crusades or what about this? I go, hold on. These are all relevant things too. And while the Crusades are not nearly as cut and dry as you think they are, in fact, which to it ended in like the Fourth Crusade, two groups went down there and then end up fighting each other. It's like you're both
Christians.
Yeah, what the fuck are you thinking? But then you had things like the Inquisition. You've had all kinds of stuff. And it's like, yeah, no, you just, that doesn't erase this, and that doesn't, they don't balance each other out.
It's patterns. Just, it's people just, have patterns. Right.
And it's because it's one religion and not the other, doesn't make, it's the motivations are the same. It kind of comes, it comes from the same concept, even if it's not technically the same religion.
Well, it reinforces it, in my opinion. I mean, the idea that, it's not the idea that Christianity is so amazing and Islam is so bad. It's that ideologies force people into very terrible behaviors.
They can very much so.
And they often do. Yeah. I mean, and most of the time it goes bad when you have a powerful, potent ideology that right. is dominating a culture.
Well, imagine, okay, you had Christian zealotry and let's say Islam and Christianity had swapped. And Islam had all kinds of reformations and different sects break off from it and all this. And it become more like Christianity is in this modern era. But Christianity stayed in a more less developed sense and had a more rigorous, fervent zealotry in terms of adherence to doctrines or even interpretations of doctrines in certain
Old
ways.
Old Testament style.
So – but within this context of the modern era. So now you have the internet. So any – let's say, you know, you only got like a million people in the world that feel this way, but these million can all connect with each other via social media, via different electronic ways. They can create weaponize things much easier. They can coordinate. They can. It's not like the Crusades where you had to get money from a king and other monarchs. Get together all these troops. Get together all these supplies. March them all down into the Middle East to where you've got the Turks waiting for you that they've done the same thing. And then you guys all meet up on these different points of battle. You could literally be in at war all over the world all day, every day, all at the same time because of the modern advances of technology. And not to mention you have firearms, you have explosives and chemicals and things that you can use to your disposal.
Drones.
Or a truck.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You didn't have, you know, 6-ton trucks to drive into a crowd. That's just technology. It helps. It makes our lives better, but in other ways, it can also create calamity for us. And it's really, they're tools. You know, social media is a tool. I think that social media is. If you were to track the mass shootings that have happened, the rise of social media and I think the rise of mass shootings would be on a parallel. I really think that it's social media that's increasing the amount that you see with the school shootings and things like that. I think that's
because they get fame from it.
They get fame, or you're able to antagonize someone and they can't get away from you much more easily. The ressentiment, using a Nietzschean term in terms of the resentment, the resentfulness from seeing other people having what you think you deserve or doing, thinking that they somehow are having more of what you think that you want that as well. Why do they get to have it and I don't? Or any number of reasons why you could be incredibly potently resentful. And now you have this thing that's just in your life pumping all this kind of stuff at you all the time. And I think that it can affect people in some really pathologically bad ways. And now you have technology to also enact it. And if it's not in the end, you can also easily make the argument if it's not a firearm, it could be something else. And that doesn't make it any better. But I think that the rise of social media is a direct correlator. It's directly responsible for the rise in these school shootings. Correlates to it. I think that there's a correlation there.
I think it's certainly there's a lot going on in society. I think the big factor. Well, there's a lot of factors. People are alienated.
Yes.
There's terrible child rearing. People have mental health issues.
Yes.
People are medicated. The big one is
medication. Now imagine all that with the technology of social media able to heighten some of the effects of some of these things or to create – so someone that feels alienated. Imagine now not only do you feel alienated in the real world, but then when you're on social media – your body knows it's not the real world, but you could be alienated out there too. And that which alienates you there could still penetrate and get to you while you're away from it. If people are fucking with you at school or what have you, and then you're at home, you're feeling alienated there. And then this is continuing to fuck with you through social media,
yeah,
or other people are fucking with you on social media. Let's say you're playing your video games and people are talking shit because you keep getting shot in, you know, Battlefield 5 or whatever. And then all these things are just compounding.
Compounding, yeah.
And while no one knows, I mean, I'm sure you wouldn't necessarily know that if I say, oh, you know, fuck you, noob, or something on some video game, that this person is essentially in real life being told fuck you every day, all day, feeling like the whole world thinks fuck you. How would you know that? But it could be. Then that person snaps, or that person has they have a psychological issue that they're not.
I'm sure there's a bunch of factors. There's a bunch of factors. First of all, there's the ability to kill large groups of people.
Yes.
Which is unprecedented, right? The ability to use assault rifles and just fucking semi-automatic guns and go in and kill large groups of people. The knowledge that if you do that, it'll make a huge splash and giant headlines and you'll be infamous. Yeah. The fact that a lot of these people are on dissociatives, a lot of these people are on like serious psych medications,
yes,
that we really have only been studying the effects on human beings for the past couple decades. There's not a whole lot of data on long-term use of these SSRIs.
Correct.
Over 20, 30, 40 years.
Correct.
So you've got varying peoples with varying mental illnesses, varying psychological pressures and stresses and lives that are just beyond fucked, and then they have access to guns. And they want people to hurt the way they're hurting. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of factors going on.
Well, and you know, even if they illegally acquire the guns, I mean, they still. I mean, it doesn't matter what the tool is per se. But
well, you know what? I don't think we're meant to understand. I don't think we understand, nor are we meant to live in large groups of people where we don't know the people around us.
That's another thing.
I think that is a really new situation for human beings.
People overlook the historical significance of the population growths, the population density that has been gathering as we get into these high density civilized areas like cities, these big cities, and it changes everything.
And people are less likely to know that many. Like if you live in a town of 150 people, you probably know 150 people. If you live in a city of 5 million people, you probably know 10 people. You know people you work with. You might know a couple friends. Mm-hmm. You know, unless you're like a really social person.
Sure.
You probably have a way more limited number of people that you actually know than people that have a tight-knit small town and small community. But, you know, those people are obviously in your business. That's one thing. If you have I know friends that live in small towns. Fuck, man. There's things that come with that, too.
Yes.
A lot of busybodies.
A lot of busybodies.
Peeking over the fence.
I think they had the anal sex last night.
Jesus is going to punish him for that.
Jesus is going to punish me. When the next lightning storm come on through, you don't fuck.
Jesus does not like butt fucking. Speaking of butt fucking, let's talk about USADA.
Yeah. Without the lube.
Yeah. We were we started this podcast talking about what – we had talked about your situation with Brendan Schaub, and I had talked about your situation where you you tested positive from a tainted supplement, like legitimately – tested positive from a tainted supplement. You were cleared, but this whole process was a goat rope.
Yeah.
Right? It took a long time to work out, and you didn't feel like you were fairly treated.
Not in the least. It started one way, then took a fucking curve.
What happened?
Well, so...
What did you take?
I took a supplement that had tribulus in it. That's all it was. It's just
It's a
Chinese herb.
It's a Chinese herb that stimulates testosterone, and by the way, barely works.
Yeah, it's not gonna turn you into Superman or anything like that.
If you get more sleep, it's better for your testosterone production than tribulus.
So it's just tribulus is all it was, and the supplement itself, as it turns out, was contaminated with a SARM called osterine, but when I say contaminated, I mean like it had such trace amounts that the people that did the lab testing on it said, well, it's clearly just contamination because this wouldn't help you. This wouldn't do anything for you.
And let's explain how that happens. A lot of these places, I know this for a fact because I am one of the owners of Onnit. On It is a third-party tested company where we get our stuff tested by an independent party to make sure that there's nothing funky with it. But we've had some issues in the past with stuff being in our earliest formulations of Alpha Brain that weren't supposed to be in there. And what it comes from is you buy your ingredients from a company. The company has these vats that they mix everything in, and they don't properly clean the vats. And if they don't properly clean the vats, you're buying some stuff from China. Who knows what they're chucking in there? They got steroids in there. They got this. They got that. Right. A lot of creatine is tainted with all sorts of shit. A lot of different supplements are tainted.
And that's what USADA thought it could have been at first.
It happened
creatine.
To Tim Means.
Yes, it happened to Tim
to,
Means.
Yoel Romero.
Yes.
A lot of guys.
So this stuff is contaminated, right? And so USADA was testing me. I had a fight in September of 2016 against Arlovsky. And then after that, I was like, yo, I'm just going to take a break for a while. I'm not fighting for – I'm going to tour Europe and goof off and whatever. And then when I get back, I don't know when I'm going to get back in the ring. And they're like, all right, whatever. And we, the UFC, we told them. But USADA would still come around and test. And it's like, okay, fine, whatever.
So this is post-testing positive?
This is pre.
Pre. Okay.
Yeah. And so
you fought Arlovsky and you said, I'm just going to chill for a while.
Yeah. And then, you know, one day, for one, when I'm out there in Europe and I let them know, like, hey, I'm going fucking where the wind takes me in Europe. And I don't have a whereabouts to fill in because I could be on a train moving here, moving there, whatever.
Right. Which is your prerogative as a human being.
And they know that, and yet then they go ahead and send someone to my fucking house to try and test me while I'm in Europe, and I'm just going, okay.
So isn't there like an app where you fill out?
There is an app, but if
how's
I'm...
How's that work?
You can fill out where you're supposed to be ahead of time for the most part. So on Tuesday, the 16th, I'm going to be at this place from this time to this time, and then, but what is your home base? So if we don't go to these places, then we'll just meet you at your home at some time or whatever.
So let's say you just decide to go to Japan.
Yeah.
Do you have to tell them, hey, today I'm going to take a train to Osaka.
Yes.
Today I'm going to go to the mountains. Mm-hmm. So you have to give them a detailed itinerary of every day.
Every day.
Okay.
And so I'm like, fuck, dude. I'm just trying to be out here living, just doing whatever. I'm not fighting. But, you know, when I get home, you test me wherever you want.
You just wanted to enjoy a vacation, just travel.
Correct. And they go, they send someone to my house. I was like, fuck, all right. And then there are times where...
So what happens when they send someone to your house, but you told them you weren't there?
Well, for one, no one told... I don't know what mechanical elements within their organization, how that works, but they sent someone there anyways. I'm not there. That counts
but you
as
would,
a...
But it count, does it count? Because did you tell them that you were going to be on the road?
We did.
So they still counted that as you not being there for a test?
Yes.
Well, that doesn't make any fucking sense.
Well, it is what it is. So,
but wait a minute. If they're going to give you a strike, like don't they have to follow their protocol? And their protocol is you have to inform them of where you're going to be.
Right.
Yes. So if you did that, you inform them where you're going to be.
And yes. My manager literally told Nowitzki and the UFC, he's not going to be home for almost a month, and he's fucking practically backpacking all through Europe, going from place to place to place. So he's going to be real hard to get a hold of.
Good time to take steroids.
Oh, yeah. Get just jacked
just
up.
Just fucking
get
hit that
ripped and come
boy.
Back.
Bang!
Just swole
Bang!
To the gills. Yeah, you'll pass.
But
true.
If they showed up in Europe, you did give them your location, and you told them where you were.
If they would, but I was gone. I didn't fill in any locations. I just went wherever I went.
So when you went wherever you went, and your manager told USADA that you were in Europe, they still showed up at your house?
In L.A.
Okay. Well, that doesn't seem to make any sense.
No.
And they give you a strike?
Yes. And so I'm like, okay, that's aggravating.
They gave Cowboy a strike when he was at the UFC.
Yeah. So it's stuff
How
like
about
that.
Them apples?
And I saw that, and I'm like, you know what? I can't fuck around with any of this stuff. I don't want people to use this as some sort of kindling to try and start a fire about me. And so then I get back home, and they're, you know, test me again. Like, all right, fine, whatever. And then they test me again, and I'm like, okay, now you just made me late to an audition. As you just showed up out of nowhere. Cool.
So they can do that? Like, they can just show up and you can't say, hey, I have an appointment to keep.
They're there.
But even if you are not fighting, like, say if you're running out the door and you have a business appointment, how long does it take for them to test you?
Depends on what they're doing, whether it's blood and urine or just urine. But with me, it's always been blood and urine.
So you can't say, hey, you guys are going to have to come with me because I got to go to this fucking audition.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't try that.
I would say that. Get in the car, bitch.
How are you going to sit there and have someone draw blood
You're
on
not
you?
Going to. You guys are going to have to do it when I'm done. Like, if you want to keep an eye on me, come with me the whole way.
I always took it as they showed up. It's like, well, here it goes.
That doesn't seem to make any sense. If you have previous commitments and you have to do something, they shouldn't have, like, ultimate precedent over your life. Like, they shouldn't be able to just decide, like, showing up randomly.
I suppose they could make an argument in some way on that.
But if you have a life.
Well, in any case, so okay. I take this test and I'm like, all right, I'm just going to retire for now. I got too much shit I got to do. I'm not fighting anytime soon. I've got my New Japan stuff. I've got auditions. I've got all these things. I'm traveling and I'm not going to fight.
Right.
So just leave me be. And then I'm in Japan and the very last test I took right before retiring. Oh, you're flagged. I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Really? Really? All these tests. Over all these years, me being the first person to do complete out of competition or in competition random urine and blood testing when I worked with WADA and the Nevada State Athletic Commission when I fought Travis Brown. So no one had ever done actual random testing before, and there was no USADA involved in the UFC yet.
Why did you do that?
It was something that the NSAC wanted to see done, and I'm like, fine, yeah, whatever.
You wanted to see that done because you had tested positive in the past.
Right, and so I was like,
what did you tested positive before in the past? You've taken some stuff, right?
I tested positive for anabolics in the past. Well, right. But I mean, the supplement market used to be way wilder than it used to be.
Well, and also, fighting was way wilder.
Fighting was way wilder. The supplement industry was way wilder. It's like back in 2002, you could still buy all this shit over the counter that by 2004 got reclassified as steroids.
Dude, I remember I was taking this shit called Mag-10. Do you remember that stuff?
I remember Mag-10. What was the name of the company that makes that?
Death Incorporated.
Death Incorporated.
That shit.
Yeah, that shit is all steroids
now.
That
shit was steroids. It was steroids, 100%.
I remember Mag-10.
Yeah, you gained like 10 pounds in 6 weeks on that shit. You just get jacked.
But that was all over the counter.
Yeah. You used to be able to buy a lot of stuff. And by the way, liver toxicity is probably off the charts.
Probably.
There was a lot of those things that are like super bad for you.
Yeah.
But so, real effective. They fucking worked.
This stuff worked. But yeah. So, you know, there was a whole different era. And then with California, you know, I had an issue with a contaminant, what I believe ultimately to be a contamination, but I didn't take all the steps that I had this time. And once that whole process was such a motherfuck, I'm like, this is never going to happen again. So every supplement lot that I took, I would always keep bits of it behind for until I felt there was enough time it expired, I can get rid of it because no one's going to come back and test me. I've passed all my tests. So
once you passed your test, you would get rid of the old stuff.
Right. I don't need to keep those lots anymore.
You're supposed to take only third-party verified stuff.
Well, that's not what they say necessarily. They suggest it, I guess, now. But I know that with this brand of Tribulus I'd taken 3 or 4 different other supplements from the same company and all passed no problem on their tests.
Right. So it was just some weird contamination, which yes. does happen. Again, happened to Tim Means.
Yes.
It's happened to several fighters.
As far as I can tell, I mean, I'm not testing their whole product line, but it just seemed like a fluke. And it's just such a simple supplement in any case, a one-ingredient deal. So then they come back and they're like, oh, you tested positive for this. I'm like, well, that ain't fucking possible. So then I send in some supplements, which I had to pay for to have them tested.
Mm-hmm.
They run them through the testing, and then bang, they find it. All right, there you go. There's your deal. Then they went out and bought a brand new bottle, unopened, same lot, tested that one, verified the results.
Same thing. Tested same positive. Thing. That's exactly. What happened to Tim Means as well.
So then we're in contact with USADA throughout the entirety of this. So we don't ever break contact with USADA. We have a specific guy. I'm not going to throw his name out there or anything, but we have a guy that we spoke to directly the whole time through my manager was speaking with him, and I've seen the emails. And so we're talking about how we know this is a contamination, and when we get done with all this, why don't we even try to put together something, some promotional stuff, anything that we can do to try and keep athletes from ending up in the same issues. And we'd like to do whatever we could to help you guys out with this. You know, we're not against you. we don't mind being a part of the system, and we understand why you're here. And I'm not against them wanting to do drug testing or whatever and try to keep a clean and fair playing field. I get the point of it. So we get the supplements tested. They test the secondary batch. They have all their information. It's like, all right, this should be should fucking rock and roll. And then they got real quiet. Okay. Now you're not talking to us anymore.
What do you mean? Like you would contact them, they wouldn't respond?
They would take them a week, 2 weeks.
And just, what were they saying when they do respond?
I can't entirely remember myself, but my manager was in touch with them.
So what is the protocol? If someone tests positive for something that's a tainted supplement, mm-hmm. and it's a third-party supplement, and where it's not, or it's not third-party verified, rather.
Well, I don't even know if it was third-party verified that anything would be any different.
Mm. Okay, well, if it is third-party verified and still is tainted, yeah, that would be an issue, right?
Yeah.
If you tested positive, you tested positive. If they found the supplement.
Yeah.
I think the idea about third-party verified is it's much less likely to be a tainted supplement.
But it doesn't absolve anything.
Right. And this is coming from someone who's in the supplement business. You know, there's a certain amount of this stuff you farm out.
So, as far as I know, what the deal is, there's a period of ineligibility, sort of. Well, basically, what happens is you're effectively suspended until this thing is all finished out. And they try to say that you're not suspended. There's no suspension, but that's not true.
Well, no one's going to book you for a fight.
Everyone treats you as you're suspended. I tried to corner Travis Brown because I was training him, and they wouldn't let me.
They wouldn't let you corner him?
The commission would let me
corner
him. Yes.
Hmm. Okay.
And this is Nevada. And they're like, you're suspended, so you can't. You can't corner.
But you said you're not suspended.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So you're effectively suspended. You can't work. You can't even work as a tertiary individual, as a corner man or anything like that. You can't be at the event.
And this is after the fact where you brought them the supplements. Mm-hmm. They independently verified that it was tainted.
Okay. Yes. And so then we start talking. And throughout the process, I said, look, I'm not taking a punishment for contamination, and I'm not even fighting. I'm not fighting anytime soon. I'm not. You can't, like what you did with Means and these other people. You punished them. You know that it was contamination, but you punished them.
Yeah, they gave them many months.
Yes.
Of suspension, so that they weren't able to compete or make a living during those months.
Right, and I'm like, no, I'm not dealing. I'm not taking that. That's not acceptable because I'm not. That's not what's going on here. Nobody is doping. Nobody is trying to cheat the system.
Right.
There is no. I'm not even fighting. You don't get by punishing me. You're trying to levy guilt on me. You're trying to make me out to be some sort of guilty party. As if I'm trying to be a cheat of some sort. And it's like, I'm not taking that.
So how did it ultimately get resolved?
Well, ultimately what ended up happening is we had to go to arbitration. That was all that was really left to us, because then they started trying to bring up stuff from my past and then weigh that against me as well. And it's like, whoa, dude, you guys weren't even around. And now you get to decide to add to the weight of whatever punishment you want to levy against me based on things that didn't involve you. Great. That's
so what,
cute.
What were they talking about? They're talking about 2001.
No, 2008. They went to 2008.
Affliction.
Yeah.
That they was tried the affliction
to, and they
card,
tried to
right?
say, well, oh yeah, well this happened. So then therefore, you know, now they start talking about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like you gotta be fucking kidding me.
They start talking about suspending you for 2 years for a tainted supplement.
Yes.
Wow.
And I'm just going, there's no way. I wouldn't even accept 6 months. You think I'm going to take 2 years? And so we go and we inquire on the arbitration. And I did an interview with the guy that we were dealing with through Skype. We've been in touch. It's just like at some point, everything turned and changed. Their tone changed. Even the original penalties they were looking to levy increased. New shit gets brought in. It's like they became a completely different animal as soon as, you know, there was the evidence of contamination, and that I wasn't willing to take punishment for it.
What do you think their motivation is here?
I think that they, and this is just my opinion, I think the way USADA looks at it, and it's an easy way to go about it, is that the more people they ding, the more effective they appear. Their efficacy is based on punishments doled out, not on lack of punishments at all.
So do you think this is,
you know, also remember,
a psychological
motivation
by the people that are working there? So they arbitrarily get to decide how things go about, right? There's not like a very strict protocol that they must follow for tainted supplements or for this or for that.
No, there is actually quite a bit of leverage, or there is leeway in terms of how they can enforce and what they can enforce. So
it's subjective. It's up to
the— There is subjectivity in it. They have a lot of discretion. There is some outlined elements of protocol, but there is no, it is always this or it is always that.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't begrudge them for a period of ineligibility while you're going through the process of finding out whether this is contamination or what have you, doing any testing. And that makes sense to me. That's fine. I understand that. If this guy supposedly has something in his system, well, let's figure out what it is. And once we have a better idea, then we can decide about whether you can go back into the pool or do this or do that, or if you're going to lever any punishments. Makes sense to me. But in addition to that, then tacking on more shit in terms of my case, I was like, that's not acceptable. So we go, well, I guess the only thing left to us is to go to arbitration. And so my manager spoke with, was working through them to arbitration, and we said, okay, well, we'll— what is that going to take? Well, that's going to cost more money out of my pocket. You know, the arbitration process. These are guys that they're paid by USADA to do their arbitration. Like, they work for them in a way, or they're not— they don't work under them directly, but they do get paid to be arbitrated somehow. There's something.
So they get contracted by USADA.
Yes, and so that was like, I don't necessarily feel the most comfortable with that, but I can also understand how it's not— there's probably not an easier way to go about it, but okay, I got it. Then when we get notice back from USADA that we have to limit the scope of our argument. We're like, whoa, 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 what? You're going to tell us what we can and can't argue in arbitration.
In what way? How are they defining that?
I don't remember what the definitions were exactly, but it was like, you can't— you know, you have to keep it within this boundary and this realm and this. And I'm like, well, you can't fucking try to say levy this against me and then use stuff from my past and then tell me I can't argue my full case.
So they're limiting the amount that you could defend yourself? Is that what you're saying?
Basically, like they were limiting the range of argument you could make.
But what would the argument be that you would bring up that they would want to limit?
That's a good question. I don't know exactly.
Did they define that?
They had definitions in the emails with back and forth with my manager. And he goes, well, fuck. We, you know, because we could argue about, you know, this is contamination and go from there. But it was something really potentially limiting, which was weird about how they put it.
You just don't remember what exactly it was?
I don't remember all the details. It's very detail oriented. It's legalese. And and then so we get to the point. It's like, well, fuck. Well, this doesn't even look like a very, you know, this might not even be a useful way of trying to approach this thing. And it got down to the wire to where— – and we kept pushing it back and pushing it back and saying, like, you know, can we get an extension and to try and figure out how the hell do we approach this? And also, like, how could we approach it without having to spend money on having lawyers get involved? I mean, that's the last thing you want to do is get to litigation or, you know, even arbitration. It's a legal process. It's complex, and there's a lot of—
– And lawyers love billable hours.
Sure they do. And so— – it gets down to the wire, essentially, and I just sit back and I go, I won't accept any ruling if it's a punishment at all. I don't care what they say. I'll just be like, I'm not going to abide by it. You can't force me to do shit, and I guess we'll have to cross bridges.
So your position is that if you are accidentally taking a tainted supplement and also trace amounts that have absolutely zero effect on performance.
Yes.
There's nothing that you're doing by accidentally taking that in any way would help you. And that's a fact. That's a proven fact.
Yes.
So your position is you shouldn't be punished.
Correct.
I agree.
And you're out of the—
I agree with you.
The time that you've been out, here's the thing.
That's enough.
Exactly.
It's more than enough.
And you don't need to say, oh, well, if it took 7 months to get the information that you needed, the data, right, to then clarify, okay, well, you're not at fault, to then say, oh, we'll suspend you for 6 months, but since that 6 months has already passed, it's like we didn't suspend you at all.
Yeah.
It's like, no, motherfucker. When you look into the at the data, when you go and look at this case, it says suspended, which means you punished me, which means I was guilty in some way. You said I'm guilty because that's how you got to punish me.
Right. It's not under investigation.
Or, you know, after investigation.
Case under investigation. Yeah. It's not exonerated after investigation.
No, it's just, no, right. You still levied a punishment in there to say that, look, how we caught this guy and we punished him. And I'm like, I'm not down for that. And so, oddly enough, so I was like on Ariel's or something like that. And I said, I won't accept. I don't care what they say. I don't care what punishment they try to levy. I don't abide by it. I won't agree to it. And I'm done with them. Someone from the arbitrator's office who we were dealing with calls us out of the blue and goes, so you still sure you don't want to do this? I'm like, well, and my manager goes, well, they said that we have to limit the scope of argument to this and this, and we can't talk. And then he goes, no, you don't. You can talk about, you can bring any argument you want.
Who is saying this to you?
The arbitrator's office. And this,
okay, so who would initially come to you and said that you had to limit the scope of your argument?
USADA.
Okay, so USADA was attempting to establish some boundaries for your argument.
Yes.
But the people who were the actual arbitrators said that that's not true.
Right. That's not the case. They can't force you to argue in a certain
– Oh, okay. So is it possible that USADA's lawyers were trying to – here's the thing I found about lawyers. Like, yeah, for sure they're necessary, and that's all well and good, and you need them. But – there's a reality, and this is something that I had to deal with recently in doing something with a friend through lawyers, where they attached a bunch of shit to this deal that wasn't supposed to be in there, and he didn't even know it was in there. And then my lawyer's like, what the fuck is this? And so I contact him, what the fuck is this? And he's like, what the fuck is that? So he contacts his lawyers, what the fuck is this? And it turns out this is a common thing. Lawyers, they
it's what literally they do with each other, yeah.
We put this in to give you leverage. I don't think you necessarily want that, but we're looking out for your best interests. And so now you have a good negotiation point. If you just go in with what you want, then they're going to ask for more than that. Mm-hmm. And then you're not in a strong position because you can't ask for more after you've already established your initial position.
It makes everything convoluted.
They're gross.
Yes. I hear you.
But that's the world we live in.
My grandfather was
a litigious world.
Pretty fair lawyer. He was assistant attorney general of the state of Washington. He actually wanted me to get into law, of all things, but I'm like, I think I'd rather beat out my brains.
Yeah, it seems like, well, you haven't beaten him out. It's very impressive with your memory.
Well, so we get to, my manager comes back to me and goes, hey, man, they just contacted me out of nowhere. And they're like, well, if you want to do this, you can. And no, you can't. You can make the argument. There's no limiting in the scope of your argument or anything.
Right.
So then it's like, well, yeah, all right. I'll go for it.
Because so at the very
least, at the very least, I thought maybe I could have some sort of record down of what we talked about, what was discussed, the arguments made. So in the end, you know, no matter how it came out, I could go, here's what's legit. Now you can make your own decision from there. And so we go in. I brought my legal team. They had their lawyer come, who was the same guy we were dealing with throughout the entire process. And they made, you know, their argument, and we made ours. And you know, and there are times where I'm sitting back and I go, you know, they're making closing arguments, each lawyer's, and I'm just sitting there listening to the USADA side going, man, he's just moving the goalposts. He's
how so?
Well, it's just taking a certain element and then trying to, you know, use slippery slope arguments and moving the goalposts on things. He's just doing anything he can to use rhetoric instead of logos at this point, because you know they're lawyers and they're trying to make their case and trying to find impassioned
responses.
But
when you're saying this, you know, consider that people are listening at home don't really know your case, don't know the scope.
Well,
of okay, the
so it's
was.
Like trying to say that you know, find ways at which to move the goalposts in terms of so what, like I said to you earlier, I keep batches of all the supplements that I take, especially when I'm in this program, and especially after dealing with the clusterfuck that was California. And it's like, well, I didn't have anything that I could bring to you that I could fuck, you know? So I'm like, this is never happening again. So I keep everything. They go and they test stuff and they find it. And I kept notes. I kept this. And it's like, what more could I have done for you guys? Even if it doesn't matter if there's, let's say they were all third party tested as well, I would still keep batches of the supplements, and plenty of the stuff I take is third party tested.
So what was the issue then?
Well, it's just simply they kept trying to say that I didn't do a good enough job. That did you use the did you see this thing on supplement 411? It's like that came out after the fact, and yes, I have seen that. In fact, I use all the resources that you provided, your Globodro, your other supplement 411, to check against ingredient lists, supplement names, company names, to make sure none of this shit is on the list, so that I don't make that mistake. So I use the resources that you give me. I keep batches of my supplements so they can be tested if need be. You know, I do what's available to keep from any issues. And yet they just kept moving the goalpost on that and trying to say that, well, but you didn't hire a psychic, you know? It's just that kind of shit. I'm like, well, how could this have been any better? And not to mention, I'm not fighting.
Right. So at the end of the day, what were they looking for in arbitration?
They wanted to levy a punishment against me and suspend me for years.
And this is USADA.
Yes.
So USADA ultimately, even though they knew that you took a tainted supplement that had no effect whatsoever on your performance, they still wanted to punish you for 2 years. That seems stupid. That just seems stupid. Now, let me read Jeff Nowitzki, because Nowitzki texted me because I told him this was going to go down. And his take is a little bit different than yours.
I don't imagine it isn't. All right. I'm not surprised that it is.
And I told you what it was. I'll just read you what it says. He said he'll complain about the amount of time that went by with USADA process, but he notified us of retirement right after the positive sample was collected, before positive was announced. So he was off in the wind for many months and not communicating with USADA. Big reason the case took so long to resolve. Two, his positive was from a tainted supplement, but he didn't do the number one thing we advised UFC athletes on supplements. He didn't choose a supplement that was third-party certified as a banned substance-free, like Onnit supplements are. There are literally hundreds of certified supplements out there, and virtually ensures no issues for an athlete if they stick with those. One other point for Barnett: when he was unresponsive to case, he missed all of his deadlines to file for arbitration. He came to the table later and said he wanted to go to arbitration. USADA made an exclusion and let him, which ultimately led to his favorable ruling by arbitrator. Their reasoning was that they wanted to rule in favor of fairness to athlete. Rules say they didn't have to after time to file expired. Well, but they're saying it ruled favorably towards you, ultimately, at the end of the day.
Yes, it ruled in our favor.
Gobbledygook, that, the other, you definitely should have taken.
It's just like he says that, he retired and he was in the wind. You know what my in the wind was? It wasn't even that long. I was in Japan for Ryzen with my athlete, Alyssa Garcia. It wasn't in the fucking wind.
Sounds good, though. In the wind,
In the wind.
Oh, fucking you in that motorcycle jacket. Just driving.
I'm dragging a coffin behind me like Django.
Through the Nevada desert. Somebody pulls you over. Got 8 days growth on your face. Are you Josh Barnett?
Some days.
We're USADA. We're looking for you, bro. Can you piss in this cup for me? I didn't bring a cup.
I was in Japan at Ryzen. You know, I wasn't in the wind. Okay. And, they
ruled in your favor.
Arbitration. The arbitrator. And
what did they say?
This is the same guy that the arbitrator is the same guy that put together. He's in Icarus. He produced Icarus, the movie on doping. He's one of the major figures in terms of the world of anti-doping.
So it's one of the guys who worked with Brian Fogel, the arbitrator. Brian Fogel was the guy who starred in Icarus.
This guy is an arbitrator for WADA.
Okay.
Actually, why am I doing this?
Jamie can handle this. But it doesn't matter.
So this guy has seen everything in terms of drug testing.
They ruled in your favor.
Yes. And he said he couldn't see any way that I could have done hardly a better job, that I was meticulous with my record keeping, that I did essentially anything I could.
Got it.
That was within the means of a normal person to do.
How was it resolved at the end?
It was a reprimand. That's it.
Reprimand?
Yeah.
What is that? What do they do?
Richard McLaren.
McLaren, yes. OC Chief Arbitrator.
Yes.
Okay. So at the end of the day, after all this, they say they gave you a reprimand. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
That just means like
Don't do that.
Be careful.
Yeah. Okay. That's
and,
it.
And but this took.
But no punishment.
Right.
And so all and, that 2 year shit from USADA was unwarranted.
Right.
And heavy-handed.
Heavy-handed as hell.
Well,
and
Junior Dos Santos went through that too.
It
right?
It started at 6 months, and then by the time they have both supplements tested, then all of a sudden it starts getting weird. And you know this claim by Nowitzki that we were out of no. We were always in touch.
Nowitzki doesn't work for USADA anymore.
I know. And this is so what's kind of funny is Nowitzki is such a public face on this kind of thing, but when it comes to actually dealing with USADA, he's hands up. I mean, he'll come and he'll make sure to put something out there in any of the sphere, but in reality, he ain't got a fucking thing to do with any of it.
Okay, but in his defense, he's a UFC employee.
I know.
And it's inappropriate mm-hmm. for him to have any influence whatsoever on the way they rule things. I think that's actually the proper thing for him to do.
Well, in a way, but I mean, it's just, the presentation is a bit of a misnomer, I think. So,
well, initially he was responsible for the drug testing. Now he's the president of athletes safety and wellness.
Fuck if I would know. Yeah.
They're running the Performance Institute.
Yeah,
I mean what they're concentrating on now.
But
I'm
just
speaking
that,
for Jeff and his
sure.
behalf that I think they're concentrating more on encouraging fighters to train and fortify their body with nutrition
yeah, sure.
correctly and giving them education on how to do this, and that Jeff is at the
yes.
forefront of that stuff and showing them how to avoid accidentally taking something and
I guess where I'm coming with this is that he is not fully in the loop with what happened between me and USADA because he's not involved.
Right.
So some of what he's saying there is incorrect. And it's not – I don't blame him because he's not a part of it.
So is he misinformed?
At the very least.
So do you think that they're not being straightforward with it? It sounds to me like they wanted to punish you badly.
They wanted to punish me badly,
yeah,
yes.
2 years is a fucking crazy punishment. And also – When people get, do you remember when Nick Diaz was being interviewed by all these people, and mm-hmm. there was that mean lady who works the Nevada
yes.
State Athletic Commission, and
yes.
she was grilling him, mm-hmm. and I'm like, we're talking about pot here, you
yeah.
crazy lady. Like, what in the fuck are you doing? You're acting like you robbed a bank.
Right. And if he's not getting in the ring high, then leave
right.
him alone.
Exactly. And I think he probably did a few times. I think in the Gomi fight, he might have been high as
fuck.
He
was like, bro, I'm bleeding. Oh,
yeah.
my God.
Yeah.
Maybe I should choke him right now.
He didn't give a shit in that
yeah.
fight. John Jones is going through this right now. I don't know where John Jones stands, but it's been pretty well established that at the very least – what the numbers, if you look at the numbers when mm-hmm. he was tested, and you know I know a lot of people like to say that he's a cheater. There's a lot of this going on right now. Look, real clear, the first test was proven that he took tainted dick pills. Okay, that's proven.
Well, it was actually, so that got brought up to my attention as part of all this because, you know, USADA found it relevant. The difference between that first one, let's say, and I don't know about the second shit with John. I don't really follow close on this, but this came across my plate because he was taking like a liquid Cialis, and it was from a company that sells SARMs and peptides and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a company that also sells banned substances.
Right.
And so their argument was that, dude, you're buying or using shit from a place full of illegal shit that you're not supposed to take.
Definitely a dumb move. Definitely a dumb
yeah,
move.
It,
and
I mean,
you could also just get
move,
a
yeah.
goddamn prescription for Cialis, right? You don't need to take this funky shit
you're
getting
I imagine
off the
you
internet.
Could.
The second one, what he took had such a minuscule trace amount
mm-hmm.
that he tested negative. Then he tested positive.
Sure.
Then he tested negative again. And this
uh-huh.
is something that's supposed to stay in your system for months.
Right.
So this is indicative of someone who's not taking something to get a performance-enhancing
correct.
Benefit from it, but rather someone who had something that was tainted.
And these lab technicians are smart on this shit. Like the guy who saw the results from the first little batch of supplements we gave him, he had seen everything and then some under the sun in all different levels. And this guy knew what constituted contamination and
right.
what wasn't. He could tell.
Right. Of course. They can tell just by the numbers. Look, if you're taking trace amounts of anything, it's not going to do a damn thing to your body in terms of performance enhancing, but it is going to show up in these tests because these
correct.
Tests are incredibly thorough. Hey, Jamie, Google what's going on with John Jones' case because particularly after this weekend, it's very, very relevant. You know, I mean – with Brock Lesnar getting in there with DC yeah. becoming the first light heavyweight to consecutively hold the light heavyweight championship and the heavyweight championship, you know, and a spectacular fight by DC, but John Jones is always going to be
sure. I mean, there. You cannot, you can go on and on about the extracurricular woes of John Jones. Mm-hmm. Sure. His capabilities as an athlete, his talent, it's undeniable.
Undeniable. Yeah,
undeniable.
Look, whatever the fuck he took, dick pills, it's not making him a better fighter. He didn't knock DC out because of dick pills. That's
no.
crazy.
No, it has to do with skill and talent.
He hit him with
talent.
A beautiful left high kick. That's what it was. And he recognized a tendency, you know, yeah. that DC knows he has, you know?
Mm-hmm. But with this whole USADA process, it just became – and it drug on because, you know, we said to them, I'm not going to take a punishment. And they said – we're not giving you any option on this. And so it's like there was
so
this
then
negotiation.
One of the things that I've talked about when it comes to police officers is that when you have police officers and you have people they're trying to arrest, it becomes a game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean a game in terms of it's bullshit. I mean, it's a game in terms of one person is trying to win and they're trying to get people and arrest
right.
them. And this is why people plant guns
right.
and plant drugs.
Trying to win.
They try to win.
And that's what killed me was that, to me, in my opinion, USADA was trying to win.
Yeah.
It was more important for them to win than it was for us to have a clean sport.
This comes back to what we were talking about earlier when it comes to arguments and discussions mm-hmm. that people oftentimes are not really searching for the truth. They just want to be right.
Yes. And I've had this argument about bureaucracies in general, right?
Yes.
And this goes to – this isn't just about, you know, not USADA and their bureaucratic elements. I mean, they're tight, like the government or other things. So you come and you say, oh, you fucked up. And then the bureaucracies go, oh, shit, we didn't fuck up. And they're going to say, we didn't fuck up to the very – they'll take that to the very longest lever until either, A, they'll scapegoat someone, or, B, they can figure out a way that they didn't. Because looking – making a mistake on a bureaucratic level makes it seem like, okay, well, fuck. And here's the thing. If USADA says, oh, you know, you're not – you're not going to get punished. Then Tim Means and Yoel Romero go,
why did I get punished?
Or if USADA would say, oh, well, you know, that was a mistake. Well, if that was a mistake, well, then, hey, I got fucked on that mistake. You going to take care of me?
So no drug testing is bad, but too much oversight is also bad.
I think that a clean sport is A-OK. And the idea yes. of the random testing and all is fine. But you can't do it at the expense of the athletes in that we're in the administration of the testing that you're trying to blast them. Like these three Brazilian guys that just got busted over contamination that they traced back to a compounding pharmacy, all these different things.
I don't know what this is. Who got
busted? This is just recent.
UFC guys?
Three different guys in the UFC, and they were all getting supplements from a compounding pharmacy. And everything was traced back to it.
It almost seems like you shouldn't take any fucking supplements.
Well, that's the other thing. It's like, well, are we not allowed to take anything? Anything at all? Nothing?
Well,
it
seems
no
like,
on it?
What are supplements? What do they do? They help your performance.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, should you take no performance enhancing? Should we take nothing? Should you just
right.
eat food? I mean, there's got to be someone out there that's just eating food.
Well, there's
food
that will enhance your performance too.
Right. Like kangaroo meat that Frank Mir took. You take some bad kangaroo meat.
Oh, man, that kangaroo meat. Fuck, you get a good pump on that.
First of all, ain't nobody giving steroids to kangaroos, okay? Kangaroos are fucking everywhere. Investigation identifies compounding pharmacies as a source of tainted supplements behind three positive
now,
tests
Junior Dos
into
Santos,
the UFC.
Almeida, and Antonio, and Minotauro. And here's the weird thing. So it comes all the way down to it, and then their highlight on this is, and, you know, gave them a suspension, but at the time has already lapsed, so they won't actually have to serve any time. It's like, but you just fucking suspended them nonetheless.
Yeah.
You didn't have to do that.
Right.
So it took 7 or 8 months or whatever for this to get cleared up, and that's unfortunate.
Junior tested positive for a diuretic, is that correct? That's what it was.
Hydrochloro something. I
believe it's a diuretic, which is crazy because he's a fucking heavyweight. He's not losing any weight. And Junior's not on the high side of heavyweight. He's not like a 265 guy that's cutting
right.
weight to make the upper limit. Like
he was
Brock
just trying
Lesnar.
To keep those wrinkles out of his face.
Just trying to look good, yeah. baby. Just look,
that's right.
Does diuretics make you look good?
Fuck, I don't know.
I don't know. Think
I thought it makes you
just
shit yourself.
It just dehydrates you, right?
That too, yeah. It just pulls all the water
John
out.
John Bones Jones, keep in mind, life is a journey, not a race. God's will for me to be there, blah, 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 blah.
Right,
July
let's not
9th.
Forget I'm still the youngest guy in the top five, heavyweight and light heavyweight. Yeah, uh-huh. He is young.
No what idea. Is that? What is Unique Mazik? What is that?
That's someone's account.
Oh, is he responding to somebody?
Yeah, he tweeted that a couple hours ago.
Up to a four-year suspension.
Okay, right now he remains in a provisional suspension awaiting the outcome of his situation with USADA after testing positive for steroids last July following the knockout win over Cormier. Was it a steroid?
Man, I couldn't tell you.
John faces up to four-year suspension due to second violation of UFC's anti-doping policy, but obviously the youngest side ever champion. But obviously, first of all, when it says second violation, the first violation was proven to be something tainted. So he's not – when you say violation, I want to hear this guy took steroids. He took steroids because he was trying to get a performance-enhancing result from it. Suspend that guy.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear, oh, he got toothpaste. It's from China and it had fucking something in it.
You remember that too, don't you? Wasn't that a fucking crazy story about the toothpaste that had some poison in it or something that they were selling in China?
Yeah, what was that?
Some wild shit.
What was that? Toothpaste in China that had poison in it.
Yeah.
I'm vaguely remembering this. I just said it just because it sounds stupid.
But it's real.
But I think, yeah.
Yeah, you just made it up. And all of a sudden, it's true.
It's probably in the back of my memory somewhere that I just
hear this. I hear what you're saying.
Toxic toothpaste made in China, found in U.S. Look
sure
at it. Sure fresh.
Sure fresh.
Sure fresh. That's like some people that don't really understand English. Sure. Well, what does that mean?
I don't know.
Ah, sure. It's sure. Good. Very good. Sure. Sure fresh.
I think it's a Chinese, a romanization of a Chinese word.
Dollar plus store in Maine. They're trying to kill people in Maine. God damn. Oh, yeah. It's one of those green things up you have there. To pay for.
Yeah.
What is it? What was in it? Antifreeze. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, it's Maine. Look at how cold it gets up there.
Cold.
Why wouldn't you need antifreeze?
They're helping these people out.
No, they were doing a good job
they
by
don't
them.
Want their teeth falling out. Freezing, no. Shattering propylene like
glycol?
Glass.
Yeah. Little propylene glycol.
Oh, I'm 100% for testing. I'm 100% for them stopping people from taking performance-enhancing drugs, but this sounds very heavy-handed.
It was just – and I had no problem with the system. And then this – the way it unfolded to me was just like this is – I don't need to be fighting multiple fronts when I'm just trying to do everything I can to stay in this as an athlete.
Now, when you first started, I mean, you won the UFC heavyweight title in 2001?
Two at 24 years old.
Yeah, youngest ever. When you won that, man, everybody was on some shit. It was just – it was the beginning of the cleanup.
It
right?
was everywhere. And even then –
it was going into the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Previous to that, before Zuffa bought the UFC, the idea of having giant fights in Vegas was fucking a win. It was a,
there,
just
it was
a
not a possibility,
dream.
No.
It was not going to happen. So,
and even then, like the testing back in 2002 – that wasn't official per se.
Dude,
it was like
Alistair Overeem when he fought Brock Lesnar. Fuck 2002.
Yeah.
How about when we saw the Ream when he was when he was Uberim? When he was Uberim, when he fought Brock Lesnar, Jesus fucking Christ.
Goddamn comic book hero.
Yeah, I mean there is not a goddamn drug testing agent alive that would have been grab him. Hold him down.
He's clearly over 9,000.
Hold on to that guy. Like, get the picture of him on the scale. I mean, that picture is amazing.
Look at both of them.
Yeah, they're both jacked.
Fucking boxes, man.
But that one. Hold them down. Everybody would have been like, hang on. What
would
in
a
the
needle even
fuck?
Could you even get a needle in his vein?
Dude,
he's just like ping, just bends.
He was so jacked. This part of me just wishes he would leave and go to Japan and go right back to it. You know, just fill him up. I mean, look, everybody knew what the fuck it was back then. I mean, it's interesting, like, Brock Lesnar being back. Brock Lesnar's not asking for Overeem. Overeem was the last guy to really fuck him up, and he wants to fight DC. And Overeem's just not the same guy anymore, clearly.
No, he's not. He does not perform at the same level as he does.
He's still very good. He's still very dangerous.
Here's the thing. Even when he was a 205-pounder, right, and he had a tendency to –
Gas out
and get, you know, be chinny to a degree. But
he
was always super technical, highly skilled. Like, I don't think you could – Overeem, him and his brother both are actually very good fighters.
Yeah.
And, you know, their struggles have never been a physical one for the most part, I think. You know, they've had – and that's a difficulty that is most common amongst fighters is the mental game of it.
Well, we saw that with Ngannou this week.
Yeah. I didn't see the fight, but I heard it was one for the ages.
It was one for the ages. Yeah.
Someone needed to let some lions loose in that thing and just like, okay, let's crank this up a bit.
It was the worst heavyweight fight I've ever seen. It was the worst.
Have you seen any of mine before?
I'm a big fan. It was the second lowest output fight ever.
So they couldn't even make it the lowest output fight to be number one.
They didn't even get to number one. Number one was...
They failed at failing.
Jens Pulver versus Joe Hoke from like fucking UFC 13 or some shit. I don't even know what day that fight was. But that fight was number one with 23 or 22 strikes landed in three rounds. And this fight was number two with 23 strikes landed.
That's weird.
Dude, it was insane. And then Francis, go to Francis Ngannou's Instagram. He released a statement today, and his statement was essentially that he was he carried the fear. He said, "I'm not proud of my last performance. I have carried my fear from the last fight to this one. I completely understand the frustration and anger that has caused my fans, coaches, teammates, and family and friends."
Weird that he would have fear from the last fight.
And we got fucking owned.
Well,
and
yeah, but he got out-wrestled.
But he didn't know. He thought he was the man, and then he got owned.
And then
I won't let everyone down again. Uh-huh. All I can do now is prove myself and make you proud again. But look at this picture that he puts up.
Yeah, him
this
swinging on him.
Him connecting.
The one punch.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of funny. It should have been him with his head down. Francis, in the future, if you're gonna post a humble shot, look humble. You know, this is like I'm owning him.
I can't say that he doesn't legitimately. Maybe he is carrying some kind of fear from the last fight in terms of losing the result. Or there's a lot of mind fuck that can go into being a fighter.
You've bounced back. You've been on both sides, and. You know, the first fight back after a KO loss or after getting dominated, what is that feeling like?
That's a good... Yeah. I don't know. I've been at this shit for so long that for me it's just like, all right, that was then, this is now. Don't make the same mistakes.
Yeah, you've experienced everything. You've been submitted. You've been knocked out. You've knocked guys out. You submitted guys. You've won the title. You've beaten some of the best guys in the world. You've had fantastic performances. You'd have performances that frustrated you. You've experienced it all.
Yeah.
In your long career, I mean, from being the youngest ever heavyweight champion of the world ever to how old are you now?
40.
40. Dude, you've fucking seen it all. You've literally seen it all. How long do you think you can do?
I don't know, but I'm planning to run it out.
You do a lot, lot more in Japan, bro. Keep going.
I also have this bad car habit.
Yeah.
So
you need cash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh. You know, 455 Pontiacs don't get built and put into 75 Trans Ams for our Firebirds
for free.
Well, sometimes they do if you have the time. That's the other thing. How are you going to work on your car when you're off all over the world doing all this shit?
Right. Doing seminars and doing pro wrestling commentary. Well,
all my fighters. I had two guys just fight... this Friday at CXF in Burbank. One of them defended his title, AJ Bryant. The other one, Shohei Yamamoto, won his fight.
And for people who don't know, that's not lucrative to train fighters. I mean, at the very highest level, it's barely lucrative.
Yeah. Barely. Yeah. I'm not. This isn't a money thing. This is a passion project.
Where are you training guys out of? What gym?
The UFC gym in La Mirada. Let us use it for a fantastic fee, and we get use of all 55,000 square feet.
Oh, that's nice.
And we also work a lot with Chad George has a gym called CMMA, and we'll go down there too.
Nice.
There's a good camaraderie between
the
two.
Where's La Mirada? Where's that at?
Like northern Orange County,
okay.
I would say. Yeah.
Is it like what's like northern Orange? What's the border of Orange County where
it's like at that border. It's either southernmost LA County or northernmost Orange County. It's that kind of thing. Mm. Yeah.
Those UFC gyms are fucking badass.
They
are do a great job.
Fucking super nice. And plus, they've been an opportunity for fighters. I think Cub and Bisping also have stakes in some
UFC
gyms.
Yeah, BJ does as well, I believe. Frankie Edgar does. Frankie has one in Toms River. There's quite a few of them now. I mean, they're all over the place.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a place to hit the heavy bag and work out and
lift weights,
take some martial arts classes.
They often have cages and mats and all that. Yeah. And so we use those facilities. They've been really great to us. And with these kids that I work with, and they are pretty much kids, it's just about trying to help people achieve, you know, work towards the things that they want as an athlete, but also they're good people that I want to see them make the most out of their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm trying to be a person that can be a positive influence in terms of, you know, bringing philosophy and ethics to their life and helping them be good people and to pass that kind of shit on, be the ripple in the water, that the drop in the water that sends the ripples out that makes a positive effect on other folks.
Bro, are you a poet? What the fuck,
man? I know, bro. Sometimes, man, it just fucking comes to me, man.
You should put that on an Instagram picture and show your butt, because that's what a lot of those girls do.
I don't know.
They show their butt, and then they have like something about, you know, don't let negativity into your life, because the ripples of that negativity can affect the people around you, and you don't want that. Stay positive. Look at my ass.
Yeah.
Look at that fucking peach.
Pull up on them undies.
Look at that peach. Yeah. I think that UFC gym is a brilliant thing. It's a brilliant move, you know, because if I'm like, if I see 24 Hour Fitness and it's right next to the UFC gym, I'm like, oh, fucking heavy bags, everything. The fights are on TV.
Yes.
Put that on.
They also, at least the one in La Mirada has like a whole little section that has AstroTurf down and all that with ladders that have been painted into it so you can do foot drills.
Oh,
and,
nice.
And they've got sleds and tires and shit. That, I mean, so you can do other non-conventional workouts, kettlebells.
So they have it really like a real strength and conditioning.
Yes,
so.
Yes. I mean, you can do really anything. They have a whole setup of TRXs and shit like that.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That's badass. Yeah, that's I mean, that's what you want from a gym. I mean, you go to a lot of gyms, they just don't have that kind of stuff. You know, they have your standard stuff, you know, machines and shit you can lift with. It's just not quite good enough.
I agree. And so this gives you that full spectrum to work in whatever ways you want to, just about.
Would you be interested in owning your own gym someday?
I think about it. I do. I wouldn't mind having my own gym, but it's such a burden isn't the right word, but there's just a lot of responsibility that comes with it. You know, the overhead of having a place and creating a program and having people manage and run those programs.
Yeah.
And with me being as busy as I am, I wouldn't want to do anything half-ass, and I also don't want to commit to something and then not be able to put into it what I think is necessary.
You obviously love teaching.
I do. I do love to teach. Yeah, I like – for me, it was such a big thing in my life. The people – not just in terms of athletics, but the people that mentored me and helped to mold and shape me and help give me the tools and sometimes a kick in the ass is needed – to move me along in life, to get me to where I am today, to get me not just in terms of, you know, what you would argue for as successful or not, but just to be the person that I am. And while far from perfect, you know, I can't think about exchanging bad moments for different moments in my life for the fear of that I wouldn't be who I am today.
Right.
You know, Nietzsche talks about eternal recurrence, and one of the idea of that is that in your loneliest of lonelies, if a demon showed up and it said, well, you're going to live your life in every way as you ever have in every single aspect of it, it's like, well, you have to be okay with that. You have to live a life that's reasonable, that you would be fine with doing it all over again, doing it all over again. If you're going to be Sisyphus, you better like pushing a rock up a hill.
Right. Whatever mistakes you've made, they've made you who you are right now.
Correct.
And as long as it's not catastrophic to the point where you've caused a loss of life or someone's devastated and destroyed someone else's life.
You hope not.
You hope not. Yeah.
I mean.
You know, it's an interesting thing. Like, there's the concept of reincarnation. There's many concepts, but one of them is one of the most haunting for some people, is that you will live your life over again exactly the same way until you get it right. I actually heard Elio Gracie talk about this once. That everything in your life, every mistake, every choice you make, if you do not do the correct thing, he believed that you would have to come back again and do it all over again exactly the same way. And this is his philosophy, the way he lived his life. That's terrifying for people, this idea that somehow or another you're going – almost like you're going to repeat high school.
Sure.
Start off – you know, but here's
Man,
my question.
That was a brutal period in my life.
Mine too. But here's my question. I think everybody's. And the people who it wasn't brutal for, those fucking people turn out to be losers. Right?
Yeah. There's plenty of stories of that.
The fucking homecoming king and this. I mean, that's like a fucking Billy Joel song.
Yeah.
The king and the queen of the prom. You know? That's scenes from an Italian restaurant. That's literally the premise of that song.
I think it was a immortal song too, from Norway.
Brenda and Eddie were the popular studies and the king and the queen of the prom. Running around with the car top down and the radio on. Nobody looked any finer. Was more of a hit at the Parkway Diner. And we never knew we could want more than that out of life. Remember that?
I like Billy Joel, but I don't know it as well as you do.
It's a good song. The idea of living your life over again is terrifying for people, though.
But the idea of dying alone is...
But living over and over and over again for infinity.
Sure.
But why is that when living right now is fine for most of us? I mean, unless you're depressed and life's a wreck, living right now is like, okay, I'm alive. I'm here. I'm doing it.
Sure.
Why scared to do it over and over and over again forever? It's a strange thing. There's something like the futility of it all. The idea that... this is just a repeating cycle that's just going to haunt you forever.
Well, that would in the idea that there would be nothing that you could do to make any effect to it. I mean,
it's a mindfuck.
Even still, like I couldn't. Me personally, I couldn't think of something in terms of like I want to do something that as a mental idea, as a mind game. That if I live my life in a way that I could be okay with doing it all over again just exactly the same way.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing. Would you know that it's going to happen like that?
How could you?
Well, there was I wish I could remember who it was. There was this philosopher who was saying that if you were given the ability to absolutely and utterly control your dreams in all aspects and elements of it. And so at first, most people would go to sleep, and they would turn it into every fucking wonderful thing they've ever wanted. They would just be the ultimate winner at everything all the time, always.
Right.
And then they would get tired of that, and then they would create chaos and catastrophe and you know, make everything as horrible for themselves as they could possibly do. And as they're going through these cycles, ultimately the one thing that you're going to end up wanting in the end is that you just don't know what's going to happen at all. By knowing everything prior to it occurring, it takes the want to experience it away. Cormac McCarthy wrote how many people, if they knew the path of their lives, would still choose to live it.
Ooh, right. Well, isn't that ultimately expressed by fighting? Like, fighting is the ultimate expression of that, because when you step into that cage, if it's just you and you're looking across the ring at another guy who's a legitimate top flight mixed martial artist,
yeah,
and you really don't know.
I have a theory about fighting, in that fighting is actually not the only, but a great conduit into what I think of as the highest point of being as a human being. That you can enter into this state that it's not a place that you can exist at all the time. Like, it's just not possible. But when you reach it, it's as if you are so alive and you are at the peak of being at that moment. And even though it is brought on through being in the intensity and the stress of combat, it's as if every aspect of your being is charged and electric and living and being. But it's not a place that you could be at all the time. You would just be a maniac. It's not a place that human beings can exist in for more than maybe short periods of time.
Hmm. Well, your senses have to be insanely heightened. The consequences of your actions are grave. The only thing that really is elevated past that is war. And one of the things that you find about war, and Sebastian Younger wrote about this in his book Tribe, is that the people that experience it have an incredibly difficult time adjusting to regular life.
Sure.
And they really miss it and want to go back to it because they never felt more alive.
Well, I believe that war is a similar place. I think that when you are faced with death, that is a conduit to bringing you towards that highest point of being.
Mm.
And yeah, I suppose it's like that. Once you get past that point of there is no fear at that level either. It is just a way. It's just an existence. You don't consider. You don't think. You don't think something isn't this or that. It just is, and it's a place that you can't be forever. It doesn't work that way. But when you've been there and you're just out here dealing with petty fucking internet trolls and dumb shit and people doing stuff that cut their nose to spite their face and undermining this and,
yeah.
you know, the fabric of our relationships for no good reason. It's tough to sit and exist in this and go, fuck, you know, how do you get back to that other thing? This state of purity, this existence of where none of those things matter anymore.
I don't know if you can. I mean, you might have. I mean, look, we have a certain amount of time on this planet in this life, right? You have 100 years if everything goes great. You can't really expect to just live in that perfect state
mm-hmm.
of both chaos and I guess being in the moment. There's something about something that's dangerous and intense and overwhelmingly filled with anticipation beforehand and the preparation is all-consuming. There's very few things in life that are like these big moments, like a person stepping into a cage for a fight. And the consequences are so grave. It's just for your emotions, for your physical health. Mm-hmm. There's really nothing like it. Is really the to expect that you would find something else similar in life and to be able to achieve a similar state outside of that, I don't think you ever will, because I feel like part of what makes what you do and what all fighters do so intense and so incredibly enjoyable to watch is that we all know how much is on the line.
I believe I'm 100% in agreement with you there. And I think race car drivers and fighter pilots, I think people like that also likely experience that state of being as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, fighter pilots, it has to be. You know, fighter pilots, apparently I was reading some story about this, about wife swapping. They're more inclined to have polyamorous relationships.
Really?
Yeah, and then they wife swap because the idea was that they know that their life easily could be wiped out any day, at any time. And the people they care about the most, their wife
mm-hmm.
or their girlfriend, that they want other people to love them because they might not be there.
Interesting.
Whew. And that they would want the people they care about the most to love them.
Because, yeah, they're thinking in a altruistic fashion of doing what they can, I suppose, to help this person that they care so much about continue to find joy in their life
yeah.
because of their realization that what joy they may be able to derive from them specifically is always on a thin line of not being there anymore.
Yeah. That's fucking intense. You love someone so much you want other people to fuck them because you're not going to be there.
How do I get on that list?
Well, it's the you're probably already on. Yeah. You just got to ask.
I suppose.
It's the – which – comes back to the one thing that is, I think, poison in life, which is to live a dull life.
Agreed.
To live a boring, no risk-taking,
in a rut.
No thrills, no challenge, no growth, no knowledge, no learning. Just this stagnant, bullshit life that is so prevalent in our society. I think it's one of the main problems with our world is that we have set up these really safe cities and safe societies and cultures, which is wonderful. It's great. But also, we haven't given people the discipline or the structure or the just like the framework for living a life that's going to satisfy your needs in terms of your biological needs,
yes.
your psychological
needs. Yes, and people start determining that totally inane things are what their needs are.
Well, it's, you know, because they're difficult to acquire, right? Like, you think a Ferrari's going to make you happy because a Ferrari's hard to get.
Sure,
you
very.
Know, you look at it like, how much does it cost? Shit, mm-hmm. if I just had that, man, I'd be balling. I'd be driving around.
Whoa, be so whoa, rad. Whoa, I have this Ferrari.
Yeah, I'd be balling. But then you get that Ferrari, like, this is just a car.
Yeah.
Like, unless you just really love cars, like, you could love, you know, your Firebird and you appreciate it from a mechanical standpoint. You want to step back and look at it. It's enjoyable. But if you think that the fucking thing is going to make you happy, you're crazy.
Not more happy than me being happy with who I am as a person and the life that I'm living. The Firebird can't do that. There is no item. You know, I have to sit back all the time and try to think for myself that I love my library that I have, all the books within it. I love the cars that I have. I love the relationships that I have. But instead of the relationship, but just the things. And it's like, these are all great things. But if I don't have them, I am still me. I still have everything that I need in this world. I don't like to think about them being lost, destroyed. I certainly hate the idea of it being destroyed, because even if it wasn't in my hands, I'd like them to still exist for others. But without them, I'm no different than who I am now. And I guess that's kind of a thinking of like the Stoics.
Well, you've been more defined by your accomplishments and your thinking and your philosophy.
There's lots of things that people obviously they couldn't know about me. Because it's not the kind of thing that is who I am, right? And I don't need someone to know whether or not I'm smart, or whether or not I know this, or whether or not I can do that. It's like, I'll do it when I need to do it. And I have to try and look to see that I have my own inner peace is based on my own self-knowledge, and knowledge also that I am lacking, that I can be better, and if I want to, I can choose to. And those days that I don't, it was a choice not to be better. It wasn't that I couldn't. Because even going and failing, like we talked about before, is a worthwhile endeavor, because it'll move you towards either A, eventually getting there, or B, that it's not something that's going to be yours, but you know what it is and you know what it takes to get there. And that's a different perspective altogether. And that is where I feel like that's where I can be okay in this world and deal in there's all kinds of things that can draw your focus and really eat at you and bother you, and you're giving weight to these things and allowing them to have an effect on you. And that's natural. That's a normal thing, and it's easy to fall into. But if you can be okay with, all right, if all I'm left with is just me and what I have, if I no longer have anything, no more luxuries, no more this, no more that, can you be okay with that? You know, what kind of life would you make of this? And I like to think the same one I have now. You can pick me up here, take all my shit away, throw me some other part of the world, a third world country, and it will be jarring. It will be difficult. There will be some lament, of course, but I will continue to be who I am. I will see what is necessary to communicate with others and to continue to propagate this that I'm trying to create in me.
Yeah, I think we're all trying to navigate this really incredibly difficult thing, which is your life, the emotions, your goals, your tasks, your relationships, your dreams and aspirations. All these things are just so complicated, and the whole idea of not knowing what the future holds is stressful, but it's also incredibly rewarding when things work out well. And even when they don't work out well, what's rewarding about that is you get the gift of knowing that mm-hmm. you fucked up, and you get the gift of the feeling of fucking up, and the horrible, just the feeling of failure, and to understand that that's fuel for you to regroup, repackage your fucking thoughts, and now move forward with the knowledge of the mistakes that you've made, and you're going to be a better person for
that. How can you fuck up if you don't do anything? If you don't ever dare.
Right. You don't.
If you just sit back and you try to lead the simplest, safest version of a life, it's not a life.
It's not a life.
And it's not a life I can really imagine that anyone can really be truly fulfilled living. And, you know, things are ultimately incredibly soft on us. I mean, we have pressures in other ways, but ultimately, most of us are living quite comfortable lives with no immediate dangers and no real impetus to put stress on ourselves where it doesn't exist at times. Because let's just say you want to learn a new language. That's agitation in terms of forcing you to have to endure something. There's some suffering in that. And, you know, I believe in the Nietzschean concept of, you know, suffering creates growth. You know, life is suffering.
Sure.
Suffering doesn't have to be catastrophic. It doesn't have to be the sort of thing that is going to debilitate you. But that suffering is needed for you to continue to become better. You know?
For sure. With everything, with exercise, with learning, with everything, with even relationships, learning in relationships. That all those uncomfortable feelings are how you learn.
Yes. Learning in relationships. I've always said to friends of mine, you know, the first time they have like a big blowout with something, they call me up and, oh, fuck, you know, so-and-so said this, and I don't know how their dick ended up there, and all this stuff. I'm just like, look, ultimately, yeah, no one wants to get into a row with someone, especially someone that you really care about. But if this is an important relationship, the only way it becomes a relationship that has that deeper lasting meaning and that really has any real depth to it at all is what you do when you guys are faced with adversity. That shows you what relationship you have, because yeah. when things are fun and easy, anybody can be a part of it.
Right.
We're all just, you know, humping and drinking and going out and woo, that's great. Fucking wonderful.
But when does sound good.
It's not bad. As a single guy, I'm constantly looking for that opportunity. But
ladies, if you're looking to hump and drink,
Josh Barnett's here. It's mainly whiskey and coffee, but drinking and humping and muscle cars if you're into that. But when you get into these, all of a sudden adversity comes across your doorstep, how you'd handle that. And, you know, whether you're the person who brought it or you're the person who's enduring it from the other side. And
if you haven't experienced that in your life, then all of a sudden you experience it in a relationship, man, you might not be ready.
That's true.
You might not have the tools.
Yeah.
You need to think about everything that you do that's difficult, right? It gives you the tools to navigate difficult situations in the other aspects of your life.
Agreed. Yeah, it is the stresses of having to deal with a problem and how you handle that problem, because there will never be any shortage of problems, of difficulties, from great to small. And your way of mitigating those problems and dealing with them is so important. It determines how it works out for you.
That's right, bitches. Josh Barnett dropping knowledge like advertised. Let's wrap this up. Josh. Mm-hmm. You're the man.
Always a pleasure,
brother. We got to do this more often. We do it like once a year now.
I would love to come in more often. I especially would love to even at some point, like when you've got Brett in here and you've got Jordan and all that, and just
want to sit in,
talk on philosophy.
We'll do it. We'll do something like that.
I love the shit out of it.
Let's do it. Josh Barnett, ladies and gentlemen. Bye, everybody.